audio.
All right, we'll get that.
I would like to call to order the regular meeting of the McMinnville Planning Commission. I normally do that with a gavel, but some miscreant has absconded with it this evening, so we'll have to do without that. On behalf of the members of the commission, I would like to welcome all of those of you in attendance and to ask at this time that all of your cell phones be either turned off or set on silent or vibrate mode. This meeting will be digitally recorded and will be held in accordance with land use procedures required by the McMinnville Code, the McMinnville Comprehensive Plan, and the State of Oregon. Are there any citizens present this evening that want to comment on anything that is not on the agenda for this evening? I see none. All right. We'll move on then to the approval of the minutes of the work session and the regular Planning Commission meeting held on March 21st of this year. Have all commissioners had an opportunity to review the minutes? Yes? All right. Are we ready for a motion?
Move for approval.
All right.
Second.
All right. Commissioner Lizett has moved to approve, and the motion has been seconded by Commissioner Cross Mason. Any discussion of that motion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. That motion carries unanimously. This evening we have one quasi-judicial public hearing on the agenda. Again, I want to thank everyone who has come to the public hearing for their participation. As you probably know, Oregon land use goal number one is citizen participation. The intent of that goal is to provide an opportunity for citizens to participate in the land use decision-making process. However, land use decisions are a legal decision impacting real property, and the City of McMinnville and the McMinnville Planning Commission are held to a rigorous statutory and local regulations about how to make land use decisions so that the decision and process are both transparent and fair for all. The Planning Commission must make their decision based upon the federal, state, and local regulations governing the project at the time that it was submitted. All decisions must have legal findings based on whether or not the land use application meets the criteria of the Oregon state laws and the McMinnville City Code. If the application does not meet the provisions of the Comprehensive Plan or the McMinnville City Code, as presented, but could meet it with a condition of approval, then the Planning Commission must provide that condition of approval as an opportunity to meet the requirements of the code. Right now we're going to take just a moment to hear from our City Attorney, David Kosh, who will talk to us about public hearing conduct and legal standing. David?
Good evening, everyone. Can you
hear me? No.
Here.
Try not to take that personally. Okay, so good evening, everyone. Can you hear me now? Very good. So I'm just going to talk for a moment about the procedures tonight. We've got a lot of folks in the audience tonight. As Chair mentioned, we're very glad to have you here at the McMinnville Planning Commission meeting. For many of you, this may be your first time appearing before the Planning Commission, and we just want to welcome you here to be a part of this process. The process, as the Chair mentioned, is a structured process. This is a quasi-judicial process, which means it's like being in a courtroom. There will be testimony given by the applicant and proponents for the proposal. There will be testimony received by folks that are against or in opposition to the proposal. And then there will be an opportunity for the applicant to speak again to respond to those statements in opposition. There very likely will not be a decision made this evening because participants in this process do have an opportunity to request that the record be left open. And in a proceeding like this, we anticipate that. So tonight is really an opportunity for the Planning Commission to hear from you, to hear your thoughts about how this application does or does not meet the criteria that are set out in the comprehensive plan and in the city zoning ordinance. And those are because those are the criteria that the Planning Commission has to make the decision on. So we do ask that as you're giving testimony that you focus on those criteria that the commission is required to use when making a decision on this. Now there will be some time limits put in place on the testimony. I will be the keeper of that time. You'll notice that the applicant will get a slightly longer period at the beginning because there's one of them. And there'll be time limits of 3 minutes each for folks that are speaking beyond the applicant, either in favor or against the proposal. And what I will do is I have the clock up here in front of me. I don't have a light that I can put a button I can push for a light or anything like that. So when I see that you've got about a minute left, I'll raise my finger. One means 1 minute. And then when time is up, I'll just put up my hand like this, and we ask that you respect those time limits so that we can hear from everybody tonight. There's going to be a lot of folks that want to testify. We want to give everybody that's here an opportunity to let the Planning Commission know what their thoughts are about the proposal. I will say that by appearing tonight and participating in the hearing, either through written testimony that you may have submitted prior to tonight's meeting or written testimony that you may present tonight, or if you come up and provide testimony at the microphone, that you will be given standing moving forward. You don't have to speak for 10 minutes to get standing. You can even say what those people said right before me, I agree with all of it. And you've become a participant in this proceeding. So again, for the sake of time, we don't want to cut anybody short, but if you do hear opinions you agree with and want to simply reference those, you can do that. Don't feel the need to simply repeat everything that's said, and we would ask that you be mindful about redundancy when giving the presentation so we can get through it all. A couple things on decorum. Would ask that you address all of your statements to the Planning Commission, that you not speak to folks in the audience. This isn't the opportunity to have that dialogue with the other parties to this matter. This is the opportunity for the Planning Commission to hear from you. So we ask that you direct all of those comments to the Planning Commission. It's also not a popularity contest. So I would ask that you not cheer or clap or boo or hiss or whistle or anything else that might be intimidating or off-putting to folks that are here to participate in this process. We want this to be a respectful place for everybody. We want everybody to feel safe here to be able to express their opinions, even if they may not be the most popular ones in the room. So I would ask for all of your help in that tonight. And with that, I'll hand it back over to you.
Thank you. All right. All testimony in the hearings must be directed toward the criteria listed in the staff report or other criteria in the comprehensive plan or other land use regulations that the person testifying believes apply to the decision. These are the criteria the Planning Commission must use in making its decision. The failure to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the Planning Commission and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue precludes appeal to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. Failure of the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the Planning Commission to respond to the issue precludes an action for damages in circuit court. The order procedure for tonight's hearings, Dave has already referred partly to this, it's set out in detail on the board to your right. In brief, we will start with a staff report. Next, the applicant will be asked to present his or her case. Everyone who supports the applications will be given an opportunity to speak after the applicant is finished. Then questions from the commissioners may be posed to the chair to be addressed by the applicant and the supporters. Next, the opponents may speak. Then questions from the commissioners may be posed to the chair to be addressed by the opponents. The applicant is then given time to respond to and or rebut any evidence presented. At that point, anyone who has participated in the hearing may request that the commission continue the hearing to a future date or hold the record open to a future date for the purpose of presenting additional testimony. Then the applicant is allowed at least 7 more days to submit written arguments. The applicant may waive that right if he or she wants to. If the Planning Commission in the course of its deliberations decides it needs more information, the hearing or the record may be reopened. Once the Commission has allowed all the procedural rights to the parties, and once the Commission is satisfied it has all the evidence it needs, it will then close the public hearing, deliberate amongst themselves, and announce the decision. A final decision of the Planning Commission can be appealed to the City Council. Again, let me stress, we want to hear from everyone who is interested in the proposals, but we do ask that you refrain from repeating testimony already given by someone else. If you agree with that, as David has said, you may come, you may sign in, indicate what you agree with, and get your name on the record so that you will be notified in the future. Outside of staff and the applicant, public testimony will be limited to that 3-minute period. We will time it. We will provide you with that visual warning David mentioned. And we ask that you keep your testimony relevant to the comprehensive plan and the McMinnville City Code criteria. If you should testify this evening, please print your name and address clearly on the sign-in sheet on the testimony table before you here, and state your name and address into the microphone for the record when you testify here at the testimony table. Failure to legibly provide this information will exclude you from notification of any future action on the application because it wouldn't have any way to contact you. Tonight's public hearing is for docket numbers PDA 3-18, PDA 4-18, and S 3-18, applications requesting approval of 2 separate plan development amendments and a tentative subdivision plan. The Planning Commission's decisions and the 3 applications will be made independently against the review criteria that apply to each individual request, but all 3 applications will be reviewed concurrently in this one public hearing because they relate to the same property. When testifying, please indicate which land use decision you are testifying for or against and why. Application PDA 3-18 is requesting approval to amend Plan Development Ordinance 4722, that's the Oak Ridge Plan Development, to remove the unplatted 4th phase of the Oak Ridge Phased Subdivision from the boundary of the Oak Ridge Plan Development Overlay District. Application PDA 4-18 is requesting approval to amend Plan Development Ordinance 4822, that's the Oak Ridge Meadows Plan Development, to add the unplatted 4th phase of the Oak Ridge Phased Subdivision to the boundary of the Oak Ridge Meadows Plan Development. And if you think that's not a tongue twister to get all that right. All right, you know, it's also to allow for lot size averaging, to allow for modified setbacks, to allow for some lots with sidelines oriented other than at right angles to the street upon which the lots face, to allow for some lots to exceed the recommended lot depth to width ratio, to allow some block lengths to exceed the recommended maximum block length standard, to allow for the designation of an approximately 0.85-acre active private neighborhood park, and to allow for dedication of an approximately 5.6-acre public open space greenway dedication along Baker Creek. Application S 3-18 is requesting approval of a 108-lot tentative 2-phase single-family residential subdivision plan on approximately 35.47 acres of land with lots ranging from 4,950 to 14,315 square feet in size and averaging 7,771 square feet in size, referred to as Oak Ridge Meadows. In addition, an approximately 0.85-acre active private neighborhood park and an approximately 5.6-acre public open space greenway dedication along Baker Creek are proposed. The subject site is located generally north of Baker Creek Road and the multi-phased Oak Ridge residential development and south of Baker Creek. It is more specifically described as tax lot 602, section 7, and tax lot 1300, section 17, township 4 south, range 4 west, Willamette Meridian. The public hearing is now open. That's my gavel. Does anyone wish to object to the jurisdiction of the commission to hear this matter? I see no one. All right. Does any commissioner wish to make any disclosure or abstain from participating or voting on this application? Apparently none do. Does any commissioner need to declare any contact prior to this hearing with the applicant, any other party involved in this hearing, or any other source of information outside of staff regarding the subject of this hearing? No. All right. Have any commissioners visited the site? Like most of us have. Does any commissioner wish to discuss their visit to the subject site? Not at this time. Oh, I'm sorry? Yes.
I visited the site yesterday, and I wish I'd had a clear delineation as to what was going to go where, because the site is this gorgeous open place, and I couldn't figure out exactly what was going to happen where. So,
okay. Leave that up to the applicant, huh? All right. Does any commissioner wish to discuss anything else concerning the site? Anyone? No? All right. Will staff please give us a brief description of the application? Yeah, I can see by the amount of material you have there that I should not have used the word brief.
I was just going to say that.
Sorry.
Yes, so I do have something of a long presentation. Commissioners, so bear with me. We have a lot of information to present about complex issues on a complex site with a complex history. So our job as staff is to provide you the information to make an informed decision on the applications in front of us tonight. And so with that in mind, the staff presentation might be longer than you're accustomed to, but hopefully this will address relevant issues, policies, and criteria for these three applications tonight. So tonight we do have three applications, three separate land use decisions in front of for your consideration. Plan Development Amendment 3-18, Plan Development Amendment 4-18, and Subdivision, that should say 3-18. I will go through and describe what is existing and the existing conditions on the site. There are, as I mentioned, these are plan development amendments, which means there are existing plan developments for both of the properties under consideration. The Oak Ridge plan development was adopted in 2000 by Ordinance 4722, and you can see the property that applies, or that the plan, Oak Ridge plan development applies to, labeled 4722. The Oak Ridge Meadows plan development, adopted by Ordinance 4822 in 2005, is just north of that site. With each adoption of the plan development for those sites, a development plan was previously approved with each of those plan development approvals. And with those development plans in place, any proposed subdivision that met those requirements would be approved. So the existing plan development, or the existing development plans for the respective plan developments are seen on the screen above. On the left side is the Oak Ridge Phase 4 plan development, or development plan that was approved in 2004 that approved 30 lots. And on the right side is the Oak Ridge Meadows development plan approved in 2005 that accommodated 99 lots on the property. So what is in these existing approved development plans versus what is proposed tonight? I'll describe a little bit of what could be approved under the existing plan developments versus what is proposed. The existing development plans accommodate a total of 129 total lots, and the proposal tonight is a total of 108 lots. The existing approved development plans also show a common tract with preserved wetlands on the property, and that is also proposed in tonight's in the applications for you tonight. Both the existing and proposed plans do show wetland impacting development, both in the form of the extension of Pinehurst Drive to the southeast of the property and some residential lots that would impact wetlands. The existing approved development plan also shows private development and lots extending right to the right to Baker Creek. And in contrast, the proposed plans tonight have public greenway along Baker Creek instead of private development against the waterway. What isn't in the approved development plans but is proposed? Recreational open space. Both the development plans for 4722 and 4822 do not contain any recreational open space for the plan developments. And tonight you'll see that there are 6.45 acres of park proposed. There are additional protections for environmentally sensitive areas that are proposed tonight in tonight's applications that aren't found in the original approved development plans. You'll see that large lots proposed around the exterior and the perimeter of the properties minimize impact on environmentally sensitive features like steep slopes and groves of mature native oak trees that are found predominantly throughout the perimeter of the site. Additionally, the riparian corridor and floodplain is protected through the dedication of public open space, which is not found on the approved development plan for the Oak Ridge Meadows plan development. And so as we're going through the review and the staff report tonight, looking at the criteria for, of the applications, I'll ask you to keep in mind, is the proposed plan development proposed today better than what is currently approved for the sites? I think that's an important question to keep in mind. I'll give a brief summary of the applications before diving into a little bit more detail into each one. So we have plan development amendment 3-18, which is an amendment to the Oak Ridge plan development, again, ordinance number 4722. It originally provided a planned area of 30.2 acres, and the request before you tonight is to remove 11.47 acres of undeveloped, unplatted property from this plan development. And the criteria for the plan development is found in section 1774.070 of the McMinnville zoning ordinance. So you can see the total area defined by ordinance 4722, and then in yellow the area of the 11.47 acres of undeveloped, unplatted property that is the subject of the request. Plan Development Amendment 4-18, again the Oak Ridge Meadows Plan Development, Ordinance 4822 in 2005 planned 24 acres of property. And you can see that the request tonight is to add the 11.47 acres of property subject to Plan of Development Amendment 3-18 to the boundary of the Oak Ridge Meadows plan development, and to request additional zoning departures and to require some public and community amenities. And again, the criteria for the plan development amendment is found in section 1774070 of the zoning ordinance. And again, I'll note that one of the goals of the plan development amendment 4-18 is to master plan, is to take advantage of the opportunity of two adjacent undeveloped parcels to master plan the entire space. And then finally, subdivision 3-18 is an application for a 108-lot single-family residential subdivision on the 35.47 acres that are defined by the plan development as amended by the plan development amendment 4-18. And the criteria for a subdivision approval is found in Chapter 1753, the Land Division Standards of the McMinnville Zoning Ordinance. And here's a image of the proposed subdivision. Just for reference, the green is recreational open space, and the shaded blue within the red property boundary is common tract open space. I'll provide a little bit of information about the site location and context of the site. Like I said, there's a lot of complex issues around the site and history of the site, so we'll get into a little bit of that. As mentioned, the subject properties are north of Baker Creek Road and south of Baker Creek itself. there are floodplain associated with Baker Creek, and in 2010, the FEMA firm panels were updated to study the floodplain elevations and the boundaries of those floodplains relative to Baker Creek adjacent to the subject property. I will note that there are, here's an image of the updated FEMA firm panels from 2010. The blue, the light blue shaded portions of the map are the 1% annual chance floodplain, are commonly referred to as the 100-year floodplain. And those are typically found immediately adjacent to the banks of Baker Creek or confined within the banked area. The brown portion on the map, the brown shaded area, is the 0.2% annual chance floodplain, commonly referred to as the 500-year floodplain. And there is a small portion, these are the areas where the floodplain is present on the site. That's the 1% annual chance floodplain locations. And then there's a small portion of the 0.2% annual chance floodplain that's located on the eastern portion of the site. And when we look at the subdivision layout relative to the floodplain, you can see that the floodplain areas are located in the open space areas that are provided within the subdivision proposed. And so there would be no development within either the 1% annual chance floodplain or the 0.2% annual chance floodplain as proposed. And then just to be clear, by code, development is not allowed in the 1% annual chance floodplain, and the 0.2% annual chance floodplain is not regulated by any code in McMinnville. the property itself is east of undeveloped land owned by Stafford Land Company, and it's anticipated that future development in the property to the west of the property, the Stafford land, would add an additional 300 to 350 dwelling units to the area. Baker Creek East and West developments to the south of Baker Creek Road have a total of 278 total dwelling units. It's important to note that the 2010 transportation system plan that defines the build-out of the transportation system within McMinnville considers full build-out of land based on the density allowed per zone. So it accommodates all of that future development into the plan. And the local street network is designed to accommodate the traffic through that transportation system plan. There are wetlands found on the 11.47 acre parcel that's subject, that's in the southeast portion of the subject site. There are 3.09 total acres of natural wetland on the site. 1.06 of the 3.09 acres are proposed to be impacted by the development, and 2.03 of the 3.09 would remain untouched. McMinnville does rely on state and federal agencies for wetland regulation. McMinnville does not regulate wetlands itself. Instead, we rely on the expertise of the Department of State Lands and Army Corps of Engineers for that regulation. So here we'll zoom in a little bit to the 11.47 acre parcel at the north end of the Oak Ridge developments. And if we superimpose the subdivision there, the proposal, you can see the shaded gray area within the red property boundary is the delineated wetland found on the site. And then the shaded blue region there is the protected wetland that would remain untouched and undisturbed by development. Okay. Pardon me for a moment. Okay, now we'll get into some more detail for each of the three applications. And first up, we have the plan development amendment, PDA 3-18. So the current zoning on the site as, well, we haven't discussed it yet, but it's R2 PD, single family residential plan development. And as we discussed, it's governed by ordinance 4722, the plan development amendment adopted in 2000 that rezoned 30.2 acres of land into the R2 PD zone. And originally it approved the development plan approved 107 lots. Through some minor plan development amendments, those 107 lots were reallocated from three phases into four phases. And at the time the fourth phase was approved, 30 lots remained undeveloped and unplatted, yet approved. Part of the history of this site, you can see on the left-hand side the original Oak Ridge subdivision approval and the development plan approval from 2000 highlighted as an intersection of Pinot Noir Drive and Pinehurst Drive that was planned. Through some of the plan development amendments that were then subsequently approved, that intersection was then moved north into the Oak Ridge Meadows plan development area and considered to be part of that that plan. And with that change, that created a situation where neither the Oak Ridge subdivision or the Oak Ridge Meadows subdivisions that were both approved could be built without construction of the other. At the time when the economy was booming, this didn't seem like a problem. And then when the recession hit, the economic feasibility of building two subdivisions simultaneously became problematic, and neither subdivision was realized, or the fourth phase of the Oak Ridge and Oak Ridge Meadows was not realized at that time. So the request tonight before you for Plan Development Amendment 3-18 is to remove the 11.47 acres of undeveloped property that was the planned to be the fourth phase of Oak Ridge Plan Development. Remove it from Ordinance 4722, the Plan Development. And that parcel would remain in the base R2 zone until it was rezoned. We're looking at the entire 4722 area and removing the 11.47 acre parcel of the north. And it would remain R2. Some of the issues to consider in this application. The issue removes land from an existing plan development to include in an adjacent plan development for connectivity, efficiency, and open space planning. And staff notes that it meets the comp plan policies and code criteria for a plan development amendment, and that the Oak Ridge plan development that is built out and existing, the first three phases, would still meet the intent and covenants of the comprehensive plan and code requirements. And what would happen to this land if successfully removed from the Oak Ridge plan development but not successfully amended into the Oak Ridge Meadows plan development? As I mentioned before, the land would be rezoned from R2 PD to R2 if removed from Oak Ridge, but then the future development would need to be compliant with strictly the R2 zone. And both of these are defined in conditions of approval for the plan development 3-18. We'll walk through the review criteria for this plan development amendment. And as I mentioned before, section 1774070 contains the review criteria, of which the first one reads that there are special physical conditions or objectives of a development which the proposal will satisfy to warrant departure from the standard regulation requirements. The special physical conditions would be that the previously approved plans for Oak Ridge and Oak Ridge Meadows made the simultaneous development necessary and codependent upon each other, and became problematic in the execution and the timing of the build out of both subdivisions. The special objective is to bring the adjacent undeveloped parcels together into one master planned plan development in order to achieve the intended pacing of the two subdivision developments. Resulting development would not be inconsistent with the comprehensive plan objectives of the area. So there, specific to plan development 3-18, there is no development proposed. It's strictly the removal of land from the boundary of the plan development, and any future development would have to be on that land would have to be reviewed for consistency with comprehensive plan policies and compliance to code. Removal of the parcel would not cause inconsistency between the existing Oak Ridge development and comprehensive plan policies or the zoning standards found in Ordinance 4722. And 4722, I'll note, would still apply to the existing phases of the Oak Ridge development. Review criteria three, the development shall be designed so as to provide for adequate access to and efficient provision of services from adjoining parcels. Again, there's no development proposed for PDA 318, and staff notes that any future development on that 11.47 acre property would be subject to review under the applicable criteria at that time. Criteria four, that the plan can be completed within a reasonable time period. No development, again, is proposed for the PDA 318, and the current plan development plan has been prohibitive to timely development of both Oak Ridge Phase 4 and the Oak Ridge Meadows planned developments. Criteria 5, that the streets are adequate to support anticipated traffic and the development will not overload the streets outside the planned area. Again, no development is proposed specific to the removal of the property from Ordinance 4722. Criteria 6, that proposed utility and drainage facilities are adequate for the population densities and type of development are proposed. Again, no development is proposed specific to PDA 3-18. And criteria 7, that noise, air, and water pollutants caused by the development do not have an adverse effect upon surrounding areas, public utilities, or the city as a whole. Again, there's no development specific to PDA 318, and noise, air, and water pollutants are not expected as a result of removing undeveloped property from the boundary of the existing planned development. Seeing as staff finds that the PDA 318 request meets the review criteria, the staff is recommending approval of the plan development amendment with the conditions outlined in the decision document. All right. Moving on to the next application, plan development amendment PDA 418. The request is dealing with the Oak Ridge Meadows plan development. Again, ordinance number 4822. It's a 24-acre parcel that is currently the planned area. And the request before you tonight is to add the adjacent undeveloped 11.47-acre parcel to that for a total planned area of 35.47 acres. Additionally, there are zoning departures requested and the request to require some public amenities and community amenities within the plan development. The review criteria are the same that we just went through before, found in section 1774-070. So again, looking at the 24-acre parcel on the north, adding the 11.47-acre parcel that's to the southeast. Specifically, the request is to have an average lot size amended from 7,500 square feet from ordinance 4822 to 7,770 square feet. And we'll note that this is an average lot size and not a minimum lot size. Also requested are amended setbacks. The amendments from ordinance 4822 would be to reduce the side yard setback to 5 feet and the exterior side yard setback to 10 feet. Also requested are the ability to have side lot lines that are not at right angles to the street upon which the lot sits to better respond to some of the topographical challenges of the site. Also responding to some of the topographical challenges is the following request for a maximum block length greater than the McMinnville standard. And the request is to have a maximum block length of 2,305 feet with a maximum 800 feet between pedestrian and bicycle ways found on mid blocks on those unusually long blocks. Also requested is a maximum lot depth to width ratio of 2.75 to 1. The current standard is 2 to 1. The minimum, a minimum 0.85 acre private active neighborhood park would be provided through the plan development amendment. A minimum 5.6 acre public greenway to be dedicated would be provided through the plan development amendment. And then wetland preservation and viewing areas for the wetland would also be provided as part of the plan development amendment request. this is the image is a an image of the Oak Ridge Meadows plan development from 2005, and I'll just note that the original approval did not include any open space amenities, and that the a similar subdivision to what's seen on the screen could be proposed under the current standards of Ordinance 4822. So here's images of the Oak Ridge Meadows original approval on the left. The large image in the center is the Oak Ridge Meadows proposed subdivision that we'll describe and get into next, but that is what the plan of development 418 is gearing towards. And then the image on the right shows the additional open space provided as a result of PDA 418. Green being active green being recreation space, and the blue being common open space that would include the protected wetlands. When considering a plan development amendment, it's important to consider the purpose of a plan development, and that's defined in the zoning ordinance. And the purpose of a plan development is to provide greater flexibility and greater freedom of design, encourage a variety in the development pattern of the community, encourage mixed uses in that community, encourage developers to use a creative approach and apply new technology to development, preserve significant man-made and natural features, facilitate a desirable aesthetic and efficient use of open space, and to create public and private common open spaces. I think you'll find that the requests, each of the requests that we just described do meet those purposes of the plan development. The addition of the property, the 11.47 acre property to the Oak Ridge Meadows plan development allows efficient use and of open space and greater freedom to develop that land. It allows for the presentation of significant natural features found on the 11.47 acres, including wetlands, floodplains, and significant trees, steep slopes as well. And it allows for the establishment of the private neighborhood park for the benefit of the community. The lot size averaging versus just a minimum lot size found in the base R2 zone allows development flexibility and would allow for preservation of significant natural features, the ability to have larger lots on environmentally sensitive areas would allow development of those lots to avoid those natural features on those individual lots. Lot size averaging also increases the types of housing products and the price points at which those housing products would hit the market. Modified setbacks also allow development flexibility and variety and allow for the preservation of significant natural features by having more flexibility to move a building pad or building footprint around on the individual lot. The non-standard side lot lines would allow the design and development to respond specifically to the unique geographical features of the site, which is incorporates steep slopes and wetlands, and so being able to respond to the to those in the design is part of the reason for the request for the non-standard lot lines. The non-standard block lengths, again, would respond to the geographic features of the site. And the lot depth to width ratio helps to allow preservation of natural features by allowing longer lots on the perimeter of the site that is predominantly featured or has steep slopes and significant native oak tree stands there that could be preserved by concentrating development away from those areas. The establishment of a private park would encourage mixed use in the planned development area and provide open space. The public greenway park would again encourage that mixed use and create a public common open space. And the preservation of wetlands and the establishment of viewing areas would encourage mixed use and create that private common open space in the planned development. Again, some of the main issues to consider with the PDA 418 is The comprehensive plan talks about trade-offs when requesting zoning variances that would benefit the community in order to grant those zoning variances, in addition to just providing a mixture of housing types and lot sizes. And so through a through the requests tonight and conditions of approval for the public open space, the private open space, and the wetland preservation, these trade-offs, staff felt that the trade-offs warranted the plan development amendment. The street specifications, again, as we've talked about, the site does have some unique geographical conditions, and variances for the right angle intersections was requested, and the request does meet with the comprehensive plan policies and city code with the condition. The depth to width ratio, again, responds to unique site characteristics, and the variance does comply with the comprehensive plan policies and code with the condition. The block length also responds to unique site characteristics, and with the condition that mid-block pedestrian and bicycle connections be provided at least every 800 feet, staff felt that that was a warranted request of the plan development amendment. The open space that was required, again, meets Parks Master Plan policies and comprehensive plan policies to provide the 5.6 acre public greenway and the 0.85 acre public park or private park and the preserved wetlands, which are all conditions of approval of PDA 418. Also, the wetland delineation and wetland mitigation that would result from development is conditioned in the plan development amendment. The wetland delineation was updated and needs to be approved by the Department of State Lands prior to platting, and this is a state regulation and approval process, but it is a condition of approval that that happen. Additionally, any wetland mitigation that is required would need to be submitted and approved by the Department of State Lands prior to any construction work that impacts the wetland. And again, this is a state regulation and approval process, and it is a condition of approval of the plan development amendment. There are increased protections on trees greater than 9 inches in diameter that's found in PDA 418. And those can be found in conditions of approval 12 and 13. The traffic impact. A traffic impact analysis was conducted indicating that Pinot Noir Drive could accommodate the amount of trips generated by 108 dwelling units prior to a second public access being constructed. The traffic impact analysis specifically studied 108 lots, and also permitted use in the R2 zone is accessory dwelling units, which could add increased units to the density of the development. And so given that the traffic impact analysis states that 108 dwelling units or lots, as they referred to, maxed out the kind of the design threshold of Pinot Noir Drive, staff included a condition of approval that limited the number of dwelling units that could be constructed in the subdivision to 108 until such time that the construction of a second public street access was completed. Okay, the review criteria for plan development 418. Again, there are seven of them, and we'll go through each of them. The first being special physical conditions or objectives of development that warrant departure from the standard regulation requirements. The special physical conditions, the unique site topographical and natural features. As we've seen, a number of requests were included in the plan development amendment specifically to respond to steep slopes and wetland and significant trees found on the site to better respond and to better be able to better protect and preserve those features. The special objective is to bring the adjacent undeveloped parcels together into one plan development that can be master planned together to achieve the intended pacing by the two individual plan developments and subdivision approvals. Additionally, the special objective is to provide additional open space amenities to an area of McMinnville that is sorely lacking them at this time. Criteria number two, that the resulting development will not be inconsistent with the comprehensive plan objectives of that area. I'll touch on some of the major policies in some of the broad categories found in the comprehensive plan, but I'll note that there are extensive findings provided by the applicant and by staff in the decision documents in front of you. Regarding natural resources, policy two is that McMinnville shall continue to enforce development controls on lands with identified building constraints. And again, I'll point out that McMinnville does rely on state and federal agencies for wetland regulation and that no development is allowed in FEMA flood hazard zones. And as we've seen, there is no development proposed in the 1% annual flood chance zone, and that any, as a condition of approval, any wetland impact would need to be approved and reviewed by the state and federal agencies. Policy nine, that McMinnville shall continue to designate appropriate lands within its corporate limits as floodplain and to protect those lands from encroachment by inappropriate uses. Chapter 1748 establishes and regulates land uses in floodplain zones, and it's defined that the floodplain regulation includes all areas within special flood hazard areas identified by the flood insurance study for Yamhill County in 2010, or the FEMA firm panel maps. And here's the FEMA map again, showing that the floodplain is limited to the kind of the northern boundary of the site and kind of the northeastern corner of the lower 11.47 acres and is not impacted by development. Regarding housing and residential development, McMinnville has policies to provide a variety of housing types, densities, and price ranges that meet present and future needs of the community, and to include innovative land development techniques that achieve that. So in PDA 418, it allows for lot size averaging with varied densities that would provide housing types and or varied housing type and prices within the planned area. As we've discussed, the trade-off for those would address needs of the community by providing needed housing and recreational open space, again, in an area that is lacking those public amenities and open recreational space. There are policies that concern the density of land adjacent to or having potential impact on floodplains or other environmentally sensitive areas. And it limits, or it states that R2 zoning should be allowed on those lands, and that the higher the potential impact of those lands on those environmentally sensitive areas, the lower the allowed density should be. So the R2 base zone allows for a 7,000 square foot minimum lot size, and the plan development amendment requests an average lot size of 7,770 square feet, which provides a slightly less dense development than the standard subdivision. And the lot size averaging does allow higher density to be clustered in areas outside of those environmentally sensitive areas. You can have smaller lots on the interior upland portions of the property while allowing larger sites to be on the perimeter or adjacent to some of those environmentally sensitive areas, and then the average meets the density requirements set forth in the comprehensive plan. There are specific policies relative to plan development, and those have to do with providing social, economic, environmental savings for the community and for the city, providing variety of housing and prices, retaining natural features on the plan in the planned area, providing common open space and parks, development of internal traffic systems appropriate for the development, and then providing traffic systems compatible with adjoining properties. So social, economic, or social savings can be found in community open space that's provided as a result of the plan development amendment. Economic savings can be found in the burden of public improvements placed on the developer, and a condition of approval that requires maintenance of the publicly dedicated greenway until the year 2032, which would save the city considerable parks maintenance fees and dollars. Environmental savings can be found in the further consideration and protection of the Baker Creek riparian corridor and floodplain, the wetlands, slopes, and trees throughout the requests of the plan development amendment. The traffic systems being compatible with adjoining properties. Again, the traffic impact analysis that was provided in the application does show that the development meets the traffic standards set forth in the transportation system plan and is found in city standards. And then all internal traffic systems would be required to be built to city standards as well. There are also residential design policies in the comprehensive plan referring to allowed density being contingent on zoning, topographical features, and the public services available to a site, preserving natural features where feasible, encouraging bicycle and pedestrian ways, having street layouts that preserve development potential of adjacent properties, and retaining solar energy access to all sites through the site orientation and street layout. Again, I think we've seen that the natural features are preserved where feasible, and that requests have been made in the plan development amendment to accommodate the natural features and topographic features on the site where possible. The pedestrian and bikeways are found in the recreational open space and in the bikeways located mid-block in some of the long blocks. The allowed density is responded to by having the smallest lots and the most dense development in the interior of the site, and again the larger lots found on the perimeter of the site where the topography challenges are present. The street layout that preserves development potential of adjacent properties, you can look at the extension of Pinehurst Drive to the southeast, and while it's currently proposed to extend to the property line and terminate there adjacent to land that is outside city limits but within the urban growth boundary, it's fair to say that the anticipation is at some point that land inside the urban growth boundary would develop to some extent, and at that point the road would provide development potential to that adjacent property. Additionally, the extension of Pinehurst Drive to the southwest would, that is the location of an emergency access, secondary access easement, preserves development potential of that vacant land that's owned by Stafford at this point. The policies relating to transportation system. The City of McMinnville shall encourage development of roads that include the following design factors: minimal adverse effects on natural features of the land. The staff has found that the roads as proposed are developed to avoid the steep slopes located around the perimeter of the site as much as possible, and to have the minimum impact on the wetland while providing the functional services and access to lots within the proposed subdivision. Emphasis is placed on existing and future needs of the area to be serviced. The function of the street and expected traffic volumes are important factors. The street network as proposed is planned to meet the needs of the development, and the traffic impact analysis does show that the interim build out of the street network is within the standards for traffic volumes and level of service until the final build out of the second street access is finalized and provided. This image is a summary of the traffic impact analysis study that was done. The traffic impact analysis analyzed volume to capacity ratio, level of service, and neighborhood livability for the neighborhood streets within the existing Oak Ridge first three phases of development. And what the TIA does show is that prior to the opening of Shadden Drive, which would incredibly reduce traffic volumes and disperse it throughout, disperse traffic along that route, that prior to that, that the volume to capacity ratio of the existing streets is well below the city standards. The level of service for intersections is at level C, which means that traffic would move without significant delay at peak times. And another thing that the traffic impact analysis did show is that at point A, there on the map, where all of the traffic from the proposed development would be funneled down Pinot Noir Drive, at which point it could either disperse along route B or along route C, that the average daily trips along that section of Pinot Noir Drive would equal 1,200 trips, which is the designed capacity of that street. And so that is the reason for the condition of approval limiting the development of the subdivision to the 108 units. Continuing with the transportation system policies, the connectivity of local residential streets shall be encouraged. Residential cul-de-sac streets discouraged where opportunities for through streets exist. Again, the extension of Pinehurst Drive to the southeast, where it would terminate against the land outside of the city limits but inside the UGB, would provide in the future a through street to connect to adjacent neighborhoods and to land that could be developed inside the UGB. Pardon my pause, I just lost my spot here. I will note too that the land where Pinehurst Drive to the southeast would terminate most recently completed buildable lands inventory does identify that as a buildable parcel with constraints of the 1% annual chance floodplain. So it is inventoried as buildable land in the recently completed BLI. The transportation system policies also refer to an encouragement of bicycle and pedestrian footpaths and that would connect to recreational areas. And all of that is part of the proposal. The sidewalks and pedestrian ways would all provide access to open space areas within the proposed development. Safe and rapid movement of fire, medical, and police vehicles needs to be considered, and emergency service providers have had an opportunity to review and comment on the applications. Provision of the temporary emergency access easement that would connect to phase two of the proposed subdivision was approved and reviewed by the fire department. Additionally, streets should be located and designed and improved in a manner that would conserve land. Impact should be limited to the minimum necessary to achieve the transportation objective. And staff, in review of the proposals, did find that the streets have been designed to avoid steep slopes as much as possible on the site and to have the minimal impact on wetland in order to provide the required access to proposed lots. There are policies relating to community facilities, with parks and open space master plan, identified a greenway trail along Baker Creek extending from Tice Park to the BPA trail as a high priority for an underserved area. And this proposal would help fulfill and begin that vision for the greenway trail. Minnville shall continue to require land in from new residential developments for parklands, natural areas, and open spaces. So the requirements for public open space, private open space, and amenities to enjoy the wetland and natural areas found in this proposal are all consistent with this policy. The city of McMinnville should continue to acquire floodplain lands through the provisions of the zoning ordinance to use as natural areas, open spaces, and or parks. So the land around the perimeter of the northern parcel adjacent to Baker Creek and its associated floodplain are to be dedicated for the public greenway and trail system as a part of this proposal. Again, the McMinnville shall recognize open space and natural areas as necessary elements of the urban area. Requirements and conditions of approval requiring the public open space, the private open space, wetland preservation, and amenities to enjoy that wetland open space are consistent with this policy. Review criteria number three, that the development shall be designed to provide adequate access to and provision of services to adjoining parcels. We've discussed the southeast extension of Pinehurst Drive that would provide future access to land inside the UGB. It would also provide maintenance access to an existing sewer service and in an easement found in that area. The southwest extension of Pinehurst Drive would provide future access to the Baker Creek North development that's anticipated. And also the temporary emergency access easement provides services and access to the proposed development. Criteria four, that the plan can be completed in a reasonable amount of time. The applicant has indicated that development would begin immediately following permitting and that an estimated five-year plan over for platting the two phases would be would be the goal. And so that staff finds that that criteria is met with that plan. Criteria 5, that the streets are adequate to support anticipated traffic in the development and that the development would not overload the streets outside the planned area. Again, I'll refer you to the transportation system plan completed in 2010 that plans for the full development of zoned land within the city limits. And the traffic impact analysis that anticipates the density of the proposed development and the anticipated density of the proposed development would increase the average daily trips of Pinot Noir Drive to its designed limit, but not over. And then at the time of the full build out of the connection to Baker Creek Road, the traffic levels would reduce significantly through the existing communities. Additionally, there are improvements being planned for Baker Creek Road. There's $50,000 planned to restripe Baker Creek Road from Hill Road to approximately Elm Street to add a center turn lane and striped bike lanes that would improve the traffic situation along that street, which is part of the community here. Criteria number 6, that proposed utility and drainage facilities are adequate for the type of development proposed, and there are adequate levels of utilities that can serve the site. Now review criteria number 7, that noise, air, and water pollutants caused by the development do not have an adverse effect on the area or the city as a whole. Those types of pollutants are not expected as a result of the residential development, and it should be noted that a significant percentage of the wetland found on the site is proposed to be preserved and protected, which does help with the wetland function of treating water and removing pollutants as it goes through that ecosystem. Staff did find that the review criteria for the PDA 418 have been met, and as a result, recommend approval of plan development amendment with the conditions outlined in the decision document. Okay, tentative subdivision, S318. We're almost there. Okay, the request is, would the zoning of the subdivision would be governed by the plan development, Oak Ridge Meadows plan development as amended by plan development amendment 4-18, which we just walked through. The request specific to S318 is a 108 lot single family residential subdivision on 35.47 acres. And again, those criteria are found in chapter 1753, the land division standards of the zoning ordinance. This is an image of the proposed subdivision. Again, it has 108 lots. The zoning requirement that would be established by PDA 418, if approved, would be a 7,770 square foot average lot size. The minimum lot size would be 4,950, a maximum lot size of 14,315. And 54 lots are less than 7,000 square feet. And so that speaks to the increased density found on the interior of the site, where there are fewer constraints placed on development by the topographical and natural features found elsewhere in the site. And the lot averaging would allow that that type of development. And again, I'll point out that subdivision 318 would be conditioned on approval of the plan development amendment 418. The proposed subdivision has some open space provided. There is a 0.85-acre private park located on the 11.47-acre parcel to the south. There's a 5.6-acre public greenway that would be dedicated, and that's shown in the green area around the northern perimeter of the property. And additionally, there are 2.03 acres of preserved wetland with viewing areas. And the preserved wetlands are the darker gray area found within the shaded blue region on the southeast portion of the property. The proposed subdivision does meet all of the plan development 418 zoning standards if they were to be approved. The average lot size, the setbacks, non-90 degree lot lines where necessary to respond to the topography of the site. The maximum lot depth to width ratio found in the proposed lots is 2.66:1, so that criteria or that zoning standard would be met. The maximum block length of 2305 would be met, and there's a condition that would require pedestrian bikeways at 800 feet max. And then the provision of the private park, public greenway, and wetland preservation and viewing amenities are all met by the subdivision proposal. We'll go through some of the review criteria. Again, I'll point out that there are considerable findings for the review criteria provided by the applicant and staff in the decision documents in front of you, and this is just a summary of some of the big big items. Streets, the layout and design of streets respond to the unique topographic conditions on the site and avoid steep slopes and minimize the impact on the wetland, and it would be in compliance with PDA 418 if that was approved. There are standards to extend existing principal streets, and that would be Pinot Noir Drive would be extended. Pinehurst Drive would be extended to provide future access to adjacent parcels and neighborhoods. And all the proposed streets would be required to meet city standards for width, alignment, and grade. There's one proposed cul-de-sac in the subdivision, and that cul-de-sac does meet city standards. It has a length of 200 feet and serves 7 lots. The city standard is 400 foot length and a maximum of 18 lots being served. Sidewalks and park strips would be provided on all along all streets and in the right of way. This slide illustrates some of the block length discussion. Again, PDA 418, if approved, would allow a maximum block length of 2,305 feet, and outlined in red along the northern portion of the site is that block length that is 2,305 feet. And because of Baker Creek to the north and drainage to the west and steep slopes all around, there's no opportunity to provide through street connectivity in that area. Additionally, bike and pedestrian ways at 800 feet would be provided into the to the dedicated greenway space, and those are indicated in green. The green dashed circle in the northwest portion of the site currently does not meet the 800 foot maximum distance between the bicycle pedestrian access ways, and so a condition of approval is included to require a another access way to fulfill that 800 foot maximum distance between. To the south, getting into the 11.47 acre parcel, That block length two is an unusually long block length, and the pedestrian way that would go through the private recreation open space park would provide that pedestrian and bicycle way within the spacing standard. Public utility easements would be provided along all rights of way, and an existing drainage facility that's adjacent to the wetlands that serves the Oak Ridge development and the Oak Ridge Meadows would remain in easement for maintenance and access. Pedestrian ways, the subdivision would meet the requirements of PDA 418 and provide pedestrian ways with a maximum distance of 800 feet between them with the condition of approval. Lots would conform to the zoning requirements of the PDA 418. The size and the shapes of the lots are considered to be appropriate for the proposed use and respond to the topographic conditions of the site. And the street access provided to each proposed lot per city standard. So seeing that subdivision 318 does meet the zoning requirements of the McMinnville zoning ordinance, the staff does recommend approval of the tentative subdivision with conditions outlined in the decision document. We have, the planning department has received several items of public testimony that we'll go through. There are six public testimonies received during the public comment period that are noted in the record and provided in the documentation before you. There were six new testimonies received after the meeting materials were published and prior to the public hearing. And we have some staff response to those testimonies upcoming. And then just this afternoon, we received two new testimonies prior to the public hearing that we were unable to provide a response to due to the late hour of receiving them, but copies of all of those testimonies have been provided to you and entered into the record. We received a letter from Tim and Margaret Rogers with concerns about revisiting past land use decisions and the impact of fill on downstream development. In response, staff would note that the prior land use decisions for the plan development 4722, 4822, and the development plans associated with those were all approved by Planning Commission and City Council at the respective times. Also, in response to the letter, we would note that there's no proposal to narrow Baker Creek, restrict the flow, dike the water channel, or use fill to alter the route of water within Baker Creek. We received an email from 1,000 Friends of Yamhill County citing concerns about impact to the wetland area and a suggestion to increase density in other areas of the development to accommodate both needed housing and the wetlands. And staff would note that the comprehensive plan policy that we discussed requires R2 zoning in areas of land in proximity to floodplain and wetland, and that is the highest density allowed. Also, due to the creative approach in planning the site from the applicant, the most dense development is in the upland interior of the site away from the wetlands, again with the 54 lots that are less than 7,000 square feet. Staff also notes that McMinnville does allow wetland impact and mitigation that only if it complies with state and federal regulations. We received an email from Yamhill County Soil and Water Conservation District, again with concerns regarding the impact of the development to the wetland and the downstream impact of development and loss of trees and shrubs along Baker Creek. Staff notes that, again, McMinnville does allow wetland impact and mitigation when it complies with state and federal regulations, and also that trees and shrubs along Baker Creek would be preserved in this proposal and protected by the dedicated 5.6-acre public greenway. Jan and Randy Hartzell sent an email with concerns about the accuracy of the FEMA floodplain maps and the downstream impact of development on communities downstream. Again, staff does note that McMinnville allows wetland impact and mitigation when it is in compliance with state and federal regulations, and that the FEMA firm panels were updated for this area most recently in 2010. We received a email from the Fair Housing Council of Oregon and Housing Land Advocates, which recommended deferring decisions until findings relative to statewide planning goal 10 were provided that demonstrate that the proposals do not leave the city with less than adequate residential land supplies. So there's no, and staff would respond by noting that there's no change to the R2 zone of the property, and that the 2001 housing needs analysis does show both need for R2 acres and dwelling units in the R2 zone and single family detached housing. Earlier today, we received an email from Glenn Westland, whose concerns were the loss of 12 acres of wetland and wetland function and the loss of wildlife habitat. And staff would note that there's 3.9 acres of wetland on the site, and 1.06 acres of that 3.09 would be impacted by the proposed development, 2.03 would be preserved and protected. And dedication of the 5.6-acre public greenway would protect riparian corridor and wildlife habitat along Baker Creek, and the provision of the 0.85-acre private park in the proposed subdivision would preserve habitat found in the oak groves in that area. Whew. All right, next steps. So as we've mentioned before, staff does recommend approval of Plan Development Amendment 3-18 with the conditions outlined in the decision document. Staff does recommend approval of Plan Development 4-18 with conditions of approval outlined in the decision document. And staff does recommend approval of subdivision 3-18 with the conditions of approval outlined in the decision document. At this point, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have of staff right after a drink of water.
That was the brief version, folks. Would you like the standard? Oh, okay. Does any commissioner have questions of staff at this time, Susan?
Yeah, I have two questions for you. They're both concerning the conditions for PDA 418. So the first one is condition 14. That's the one about the temporary emergency-only access on the northern extension of Shaddon Drive. This is just I want a clarification first. So the fire and police departments understand, and in their approval, that there would be a locked gate on each side of that gravel access road.
Yes, the fire department has reviewed and approved.
Okay, and so that, okay. And then the second question I have about that is, do we have, and this is perhaps speculation on your part, do we know how long it will be before the Stafford folks have developed their properties to such an extent that there will actually be a paved road, that they will be completing a paved road in that part. And that affects, of course, all the some of the traffic concerns as well. Do we have any idea how, I mean, are they 6 months away from being presented to us and then getting started, or 2 years, or
are we Commissioner, we're in dialogue with them. They have not submitted anything as a land use application, and I wouldn't like to speculate when they would or would not.
Okay.
I know they're working through it in terms of ensuring that they're meeting all the same standards. They've been, I think they've been in discussion with Premier Development to ensure that their trail system can have connectivity to this trail system. There's a lot of things we're working through. They're also working on a donation to the city of the wetland that's associated with that property to ensure that that's preserved as well. So we have a couple of things we're talking about and working through right now. I wouldn't like to put a time frame on it.
Okay.
There's need in McMinnville. They get that. And so.
Okay. I just wondered if maybe we did know. Okay. My other question is about condition 11, about the approval of the wetland mitigation plan. So I understand that the condition says that you will not issue any construction permits until that is approved by the Department of State Lands. In the material, in the agency comments, the Department of State Lands does indicate that if there are some problems with that or some things they want to change in that mitigation plan, that there may be some required changes in layout. So if we approve this and then it turns out that the Department of State Lands asks for some changes in the layout in order to meet their requirements for the wetland mitigation, then who reviews and finalizes what those changes might be? Does it come back to the Planning Commission? Does the Planning Director approve it? So in other words, would we see this again if the DSL mitigation plan was not approved?
Modification.
So we're modification.
Perhaps I'll answer that, Jamie. So, and for those who don't know, I'm Heather Richards, the planning director. So we do have a condition in here that talks about process in terms of amendments to the plan development. So there's two things going on. There's a plan development that is being considered for approval, and then there's the tentative subdivision plan. The plan development has a plan that then gets embedded into it. So if, for instance, the wetland mitigation plan, the Department of State Lands comes back and says you need to tweak it a little bit here, and that tweak is fairly minor, there is the ability to do that as an administrative review. If that tweak changes the layout significantly, and we do have several different parts of tests that we look at to see if it's major or minor, then that would come back to the Planning Commission. It would be noticed. It'd be just like this plan development amendment discussion.
Okay. Thank you.
This is a somewhat theoretical question. Great Neighborhood Principles was not in effect when this was submitted.
That's
I understand
correct.
That. And
yes, that's correct.
Therefore, those standards do not apply to this application. The question is this: if those standards had been in effect when this application was submitted, would that have changed staff's recommendations or conditions?
So Commissioner, because they weren't codified or adopted and still are not codified or adopted, we actually did not scrub this plan against them. So I don't feel confident answering that question succinctly for you. There are several things in this plan development that we all know are the Great Neighborhood Principles, which is a variety of housing types, bicycle and pedestrian paths, open space, things like that. Mm-hmm. And so those are in here, but we didn't go through the 13 principles and actually look at them to this plan, because we are held to looking at this plan just through the code under which it is submitted. And so we hold ourselves pretty tight into those processes.
And I understood that going in. I was just wondering if they would have made, and I noticed the green space and appreciated it, and the different housing types or different lot sizes, and there were several things I really liked in it.
Other commissioner questions? Yes, Amanda? had a question about the traffic. You had said that the traffic on Pinot Noir Drive was found that it would just meet the capacity of the street and not exceed it. But in the livability evaluation, it says that that there's no specific volume threshold, but that that community is usually use the average daily traffic if it exceeds 1,000 vehicles per day. So while the street might have been built to accommodate 1,200, the livability threshold is presumed at 1,000. Is that?
Well, McMinnville doesn't have a adopted standard
of that.
Or,
well, I mean, it says that in there, but just like as a reference. And so, I don't know. I just found that part kind of confusing.
Well, what we do know is that local residential streets, which Pinot Noir Drive is designed to accommodate 1,200 average daily trips. And if the traffic impact analysis shows that it meets that threshold, then.
Yeah, so Commissioner Perrin, I guess what I would suggest is if you could find a criteria in which we could apply a livability standard of that nature to the project, then we would look at that criteria to do so. We have standards that have been adopted by our TSP. It's the 1,200 average daily trips on this type of street specification. And so that's the criteria that we've applied. That also might be a good question to ask the applicant, as they were the ones that provided the traffic impact analysis.
Was that provided like by an outside source?
Or mm-hmm. that's yeah. There? Yeah. And I think those folks are here or can be represented.
Other questions of staff?
So this is about just like what was intended way back in like 2000 and 2005. So this whole this proposed development was already approved for like 130 homes.
129.
Right. Yes. Was that Stafford property planned
at that time?
Like what? Yeah, at that time, 2000, 2005.
I don't believe it was. No.
Okay. All right. That was it. So well, okay. So all along, this whole area was meant to be developed kind of through Pinot Noir Drive. Pinot Noir Drive was always the only way to get to that area, that and this was already approved.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Other commissioner questions? I see none. Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
And
yeah, no clapping.
And I do thank all of you in the audience for your patience. This is a long process, and it's going to be apparently a long evening. So I'm going to give you 2 minutes at this point to stand and stretch or whatever, and we'll reconvene shortly.
Yeah. Like, go to the end of Pinot Noir. But he's helping me feel a little better. This is
but to go to the end of
Pinot
Noir Drive. Like a.
What does he?
No, Pinot Noir Drive. That's right.
I was all out of alignment.
And it just dead ends right there. Oh, you walked in the grass.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay. Also,
I can't see your brain.
And I looked out in here. And then I realized how amateur workshop thing is going on. Process that you
can go. Yes, you can do that.
Oh,
The Oregon Library. No, I know. Last question was tomorrow.
Let's hope they don't do any more of that. That doesn't help the decision-making process.
Like, oh, my peeps. I'm not alone. My crowd is here. This gentleman, you know, I realized.
Why does the phrase "glutton for punishment" come to mind?
Well, you know, I saw him up, and I'm thinking, there should be.
Well, don't go far.
I did notice in one of the public, they put a little asterisk that's like, we switch the numbers so the line would be straight. Like, cool. So that's something, but good to know those things on the research and stuff like that. Yeah. I feel like attempting to use the ladies' room would be futile at this point. Is there like a private one? I was just
And same with
I'm just going to mention
it. Make sure you talk about
four.
Like, who paid him to?
If I talk. I don't know.
So he designed this. He designed this next. Oh, okay. I should come out about her.
Okay.
So, all right. I'll come back.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Come back.
Somewhere in the very cold and garbage out.
Yeah. I'm staying.
That's gone, by the way.
Where's he?
You've been doing a good job of keeping Lori in line.
Look at a river.
What time do you think? We all come back. Listen. Okay.
That's the same thing. I was like, so what's the process? Okay. Possibly ending this stuff.
You know, when I used to work for Yamhill County. Sometimes we had meetings like 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, especially like on the landfill, you know, mm-hmm. places. Really contentious applications.
All right, so it was a good thing when they did the trail here. That day, morning here. I mean, because it went all day.
Yeah.
The city council meeting could have gone that way last Tuesday. But no, mercifully,
what did they have?
Well, you did.
Pity the people who came this week.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And it was supposed to have like standing
room. I bet. But then
there wasn't.
Yeah, the only thing, I don't care when people want to talk, but I really care when it's got to be people.
We get to hear from the applicant next.
The space to hear from the applicant next.
If there's some of those.
You know, like, collect my thoughts.
You and I hope.
Come out like a question instead of.
Sometimes applicants. Okay. Say the
but like,
deficit everything. Sometimes they want to make their own.
Those are the ones I like. Those ones with the stripes. Right. Those are special dark.
Oh, that's my favorite.
Well, yeah, so don't pass them on.
Mr. Emble. How are you?
It was full of seeds. And when you talk, the seeds roll in. And when the seeds stop coming,
Ron Pomeroy.
If you don't,
okay.
Oh, that's how you been?
Looking younger and younger. I'm gonna be 71 in
June.
Okay. Okay, old man, take a seat. Let's go. Let's go. Okay.
Okay. I'll right up there. I'll also try to frame it like a question that has an idea.
We'd like to reconvene, please.
Don't worry.
That's what you got your gavel for.
Ladies and gentlemen, will you please take your seats? Thank you.
Somebody call that man a gavel.
Does the applicant wish to provide any testimony this evening? I'd use the word brief, but...
I'm okay with brief.
Okay.
My name is Lori Zumwalt. My husband and I own Premier Development, and Premier Development is the applicant and the owner of the property you're talking about extensively tonight.
Bring the mic a little bit closer, please.
Yes. I just want to take a moment to thank the staff for all the help that they've given us and advice on the best way to approach this multifaceted subdivision. It's not just a slam dunk, simple one. And so thank you both, and Mike for his help as well. I want to introduce my team that's here, and they will be available to answer questions for you or the opponents. A couple of them will give a little testimony as well. I have here on the end Lacey Brown. She is our traffic consultant. She is with DKS Associates. Next is Josh Wells. He is our engineer. He's with West Tech Engineering. And next is Caroline Rim. She's our wetlands consultant, and she is with Pacific Habitat Services. Next, you probably recognize that face. It's Ron Pomeroy. He now has his own planning consulting business. And next to him is Wendy Kellington. She's our land use attorney. And the handsome man on the end is my husband, Jeff.
Say it's a little odd to be up here and not be giving a staff report, so it's kind of a little bit different for me this evening. Ron Pomeroy. I'm now with Navigation Land Use Consulting, and I have signed in for the record. I would definitely like to thank the Planning Commission for allowing us to be here and present this project to you. I'd like to thank staff also for their thorough and rigorous review of the applications that we've given them, and also for their brief but mighty staff presentation. So, thank you. It's hard to follow that, but I will try. And also, I'd like to thank the members of the public for showing interest in the project and for their time that they're dedicating to participating in this public process. This proposal does seek to remove 11.47 acres out of plan development, the phase plan development for Oak Ridge, which is bounded by Ordinance 4722, and add the 11.47 acres to the Oak Ridge Meadows plan development, which is also locked by Ordinance 4822. That totals 34.57 acres of land, and the proposal for that with the subdivision application is for the development of platting and development of 108 single-family residential lots. So although this was covered somewhat by the staff's presentation, I think it's important to just note that the underlying zone is R2 for the property. And then without the plan development, what would be able to happen on the property is development of properties or lots 7,000 square feet or larger in size, single family detached and single family attached housing, Class A manufactured homes could be placed on individual lots, duplexes on corner lots, and also the establishment of social relief facilities. Now, that is all permitted under the permitted use section of the R2 zone. That is also not this proposal. This proposal, as you've seen in fantastic detail by staff's presentation, is for the development of 108 lots for single-family detached housing. The lots do range in size from less than 5,000 square feet to over 14,000 square feet, an average 7,771 square feet in size. The layout of the proposal is very deliberate. The lots that are more toward the southern portion of the western piece of the site are designed to be complementary in size to the adjacent existing development with those homes that are already developed in that area. North of that, we have the smaller, more affordable homes located in the interior portion of the property. And then also the largest lots would be around the perimeter of the site for advantageous use and protection of the steep slopes and the mature trees that stand at the bottom of those slopes. Part of this development also is proposing amenities that haven't been seen in this area before and actually don't exist in subdivisions nearby this particular site. One of those is the proposal to dedicate as a private tract for the neighborhood, a 0.85 acre active neighborhood park with a permanent play structure for children in the area. There's also a proposal, as part of this proposal, a connecting pathway that would lead from Pinot Noir all the way down the hillside to Pinehurst, providing a complete connection at a long mid-block point. Some 300 feet or so north of the Pinehurst connecting point for this park is another pedestrian pathway that will lead eastward to a 5.6 acre greenway, which will wrap around the east, north, and west perimeter of the property. That will also be dedicated to the city, and there will be three additional pathways leading from Pinehurst down to that public green space. This is unique not only because it's something that doesn't exist in the area, but it's also an opportunity for Premier Development to be the first ever in McMinnville to dedicate parkland along the south side of Baker Creek to bring into fruition the first steps of the city's vision, decades-long vision, of having a connecting greenway and pedestrian walkway from Tice Park, or what used to be called Rotary Park, or maybe it's the other way around, on the east side, all the way to the western edge of the city. And this will be the first step in making that long-term vision a reality. This proposal is far from a standard subdivision, and we do ask your support in moving this forward to approval through this public hearing process. One thing that I would like to note, there was a question, I believe, dealing with average daily trips and a livability notation in staff's comments dealing with a 1,000 average vehicle daily trip number. I'd just like to note that that is a livability concept. It's not something that's adopted as a standard for McMinnville. McMinnville's standard that the public residential streets are designed to is a ADT of 1,200, not 1,000. So we are matching that standard. So while it's a good livability reference, it's not actually the rule that McMinnville implements when they move forward with street designs. Unless you have questions of me, I would say thank you at this point and introduce Caroline Rim from Pacific Habitat Services.
You don't get off so easily, apparently. Go ahead.
Yes.
Hi, Ron. A question for you. Did you consider, you talked a lot about the trail, did you consider connecting it up to the east side of the property? Because you've talked about all these other connections that are going to be made, and I think that's an important link.
So the trail system now does end at the east edge of the property. There is a bit of property that extends east of A Court, but there is land between those two sections that Premier Development does not own and is not within the city limits at this time. Is that what you were referring to?
Well, I know folks can't see it, but beside right now, this
right.
trail ends at lot 62.
Correct.
And I'm suggesting that it come down and move along. I believe one of the comments from one of the public comments talked about, you know, carrying the trail through. So that was my question.
Oh, so along the back side of lots 42, 41, 40, and so on?
No, I mean, so far, when you come from lots 32 and around to 62, you're on a rough trail and you're near the river. So what I would want to do is come outbound of 63 and 64, still on the property, and then wrap around 66, 67, 68, 69, and head east so that eventually another trail can connect up there. Oh, I'm sorry. I think
Referring to you. Sorry. I think it's referring to what I've got is lots 46, 45, 44, 43 around that
yes.
east side. Different numbers. You've got it there?
Well, this one here, I'm looking at drawing C4, and I think that's the correct drawing. So the trail comes in at 43, beside it's 42, 41.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Below is 40, and then wrap around 39, 38, and then over to the east side of the property.
I think at this moment, I will take that under advisement, and we will get back to you this evening.
It was Thanks. Just had you thought of it. So.
And that was also my question is, what happens if somebody's walking along on the Greenway Trail and they get to lot 43 and there's a fence and they can't get out of 42?
Well, there is a pedestrian pathway that leads from that point you described southwesterly to Pinehurst Street to the public right-of-way and sidewalk. It is one of the four pedestrian access points to the Greenway. So one at either end and then two at midpoints.
I was hoping they would be able to stay on a Greenway rather than on a sidewalk, but that's okay.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Any other questions for Ron?
Oh, yes, Martin.
Martin?
Hi, Ron. I have one question. Is this Greenway proposal to be used only by the local residents, or is it for anybody in the city?
This would be dedicated to the public. It would be owned by the city and open and available to all members of the community and beyond.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Since it's an underlying R2 zone, have you considered having any ADUs or other types of multifamily housing on any of the larger lots?
That was an internal discussion, but seeing the limitation of 108 homes, then that's not something that's possible at this time. It would be basically, in order to have an ADU, since that is a recognized dwelling unit, one of the lots would need to be determined to be unbuildable or for some other reason not built in a permanent status for an ADU to be created. So there's no capacity for ADUs in this proposal.
Do I misunderstand that the 108 is only, never mind.
Okay.
You think she understands it?
I do.
Okay.
I just had to think about it.
So I just want to clarify in terms of process, when the commission is asking questions of you and you're answering them, I'm pausing the timer so it doesn't count against your time. Same will apply if the commission asks questions of opponents. At the end of their 3 minutes, they'll have time to answer those questions as well.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions of Ron at this point? Steph, apparently. Okay.
Commissioner Chair, if I can just clarify with the ADU discussion, by state law, we have to allow ADUs on our single family dwelling unit lots when there's a primary dwelling built. The threshold of the condition of approval is that there will be a limitation on only 108 construction permits for dwelling units issued until such time Shaddon Drive is built and is a public access way. We cannot by state law not allow ADUs, and then that was part of our legal review when we went through this process. So I just want to make sure that's in the record.
Exactly. And so my answer was specific to this proposal, not reliance on any other proposal that has yet to come before you.
And so since we don't know the timing of that road, we don't know when the and exactly how your phases will be developed
in relation to
that road being finished and therefore you being able to do more than 108.
We do not.
Yeah, so we can't say. Okay.
All right.
All right. Other questions? Someone else from your team wants to make a presentation?
Yes, Caroline. Okay. Rim.
All right.
Hello, my name is Caroline Rim, and I work at Pacific Habitat Services in Wilsonville. And I'm one of three biologists, wetland biologists from our firm, excuse me, that conducted the wetland delineation for the site. And so I'm basically here to answer any questions you might have about the delineation boundary, how we determine that, as well as any kind of permitting questions. And so for this site is a pretty typical wetland delineation, no surprises, nothing unusual. We set our boundary with TIC data. We prepared a wetland delineation report that has been submitted to the Department of State Lands for their review and approval. And it's anticipated that it will get approval as far as like our boundary. What else? Mitigation. I'll be working on the permit application for the fill as well for the wetland impact areas, and the proposed mitigation plan for that too. So, if you have any questions regarding this, I'd be happy to answer that.
Laura, you get first shot here.
Carolyn, can you tell us about the mitigation? Because we have heard from one of the agencies that the last one failed, and
correct.
I think there's some circumstances.
Right. So. The mitigation area that was previously part of the earlier permit has failed. So the applicant has gone in a couple times to try to enhance it so that it will have wetland hydrology, but it's not working out. So we didn't come up with that mitigation plan. That was somebody else, and that is not functioning as a wetland mitigation area, not only because of the type of plants that should be there, but it doesn't sustain wetland hydrology or the hydric soils that you need to say it's a functioning wetland. So with this new proposal, the mitigation for any impacts, previous as well as what's proposed, will be to go to the mud slough mitigation bank. And so that's within, this is within the service area for mud slough. And so we will be buying credits for that and mitigating that way. And it's a one-to-one ratio. So if you were to impact an acre, you would be buying credits for enhancing or creating an acre of mitigation wetland.
All right, Susan?
So let's just make sure everyone understands what you just said.
Okay.
So what you're doing is actually, it's not going to be possible to actually transform that
no.
small area or
right.
that 1 acre, am I correct?
Right.
And approximately 1 acre into and return it to the condition of a wetland.
When you do a mitigation creation on site, for example, it's... you can't take it out of wetland. You have to start off with upland, and you have to excavate down to some type of a water table where you feel like this is going to support a mitigation area, an area that wasn't wetland before, but but now we've created a wetland. And that's what the previous firm mm-hmm. put together. They thought, okay, we've got this area that's upland, and we're going to create wetland that's going to be contiguous with the adjacent wetland, but that it didn't work out that way. So there's no more room on site to do that that's appropriate in size. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we've decided the best solution would be to go to the mitigation bank.
So what you're saying there, when you say bank, you're not talking about a bank of land. You're talking about a credit that
right.
the state
you buy mitigation
allows
credits
you to use.
That's right.
But what you're saying is that this piece of land will not really, that portion of this land in the wetland will never, there's 2 acres that are all great that are going to remain wetland, but there's a portion of it, approximately 1 acre, that will have the street and a little bit of the houses, et cetera, on it. And that's what will happen to that. But then because that piece, and you can correct me in just a second, because that piece is not going to be able to be a wetland, you're basically doing what with another wetland? You're purchasing it with funds or what?
That's right. So to compensate for the impact due to whatever you put in there, road or houses, so you're impacting wetland that exists, you have to mitigate for that impact. And so there is a mitigation bank where you can buy credits. And you purchase credits, for example, at that mitigation bank, it might be $75,000 an acre. So that's what you would have to buy. You'd have to buy that many credits. And what they do is they have an area set aside to create wetland.
Somewhere else.
Right.
So and yours is in
that.
And yours is in Mud Slough.
That's right.
Which is where?
It is west of Salem.
Okay.
And just west of Rickreall.
Okay.
And, of course, DSL has to approve
you doing
it. So, you know,
but that's the permit process
right.
that you're
they
going
will
to.
Not issue the permit until you've purchased the actual mitigation credits.
Okay. I wanted to just go through that clearly so that everyone in the room got that.
Right.
Did everyone get that? Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Martin.
Is the wetland in floodplain?
The wetland,
is it inside the 100-year floodplain?
That is more of a, is that in the floodplain at all? It is. No, it's not. Oh, are you talking about the wetland that's going to be impacted?
Yes.
No. No, there's no wetland impact that's going to be in the floodplain. Those are,
they're out completely separate.
They are outside the floodplain.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Other questions of Carolyn? Yes, Erin?
So this area where the wetlands are in, that was in a proposed development that was approved in 2000, right?
Right.
And this is, the wetlands are kind of on the other side of the Pinot Noir Drive.
On the north side?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right, and so there were always meant to be houses there.
Well, there was meant to be a road that went through, and that's what was permitted previously,
uh-huh.
was allowed, DSL issued a permit for that.
For a road, but not to put houses behind the current, the houses that were in 2000.
That, where were the houses? Were they located in the same... I don't know that they were necessarily located in the exact same spot.
Hi, my name is Josh Wells with West Tech Engineering. So in 2000, the road and the houses were permitted to be there by DSL.
Okay.
Gary, did you have a question?
I've got a question. We've heard from more than one person who wrote a letter that Baker Creek has flooded to the 100-year level 3 times in the last 5 years. And that sounds to me like the FEMA map is now out of date. Now, why it's done that, who knows? It might be because development upstream, whatever. But if we're relying on a federal agency who's no longer touching reality at Baker Creek, what would it take to update the FEMA map or to update the map to allow for the 100-year level to where it really goes once every 100 years rather than three times in 5 years?
So the 100-year floodplain is kind of a misnomer. All it means is you have a 1% chance of a high flow like that happening every year. So,
right.
So that's the technical definition. But so to redo that, you would have to go get FEMA's model. You'd have to do a bunch of cross sections through the whole basin, all the way up to the top, and then run a new hydraulic model through there. And there's about a year and a half permitting process to get that map updated.
Well, that might all be true, but if hard data on the ground suggests that our theory is wrong, should we use that theory in permitting and building things?
Well, that is what regulates building and insurance and everything else.
That's fine, except if it's wrong. If reality says that the theory is wrong, do we keep building to the theory, even though it's like now we expect a Cascadia subduction zone to come through? Should we keep building houses without thinking about?
So I'm going to advise the commission that we are required as a city to apply the code as it exists today, not as we might want it to be in the future. And that if we want to, it's the will of the commission to amend the code to remove reference to the FEMA floodplain maps and require some other process for determining where the floodplain is, that's a legislative process that needs to be gone through separate and apart from the application, which is entitled to rely on the code as it exists at the time of the application.
You're reeling me in.
Mm-hmm. All right. Amanda?
Just out of curiosity, the Mud Slough Mitigation Bank, is that in the same watershed as Bigger Creek?
It is. It's in the same drainage basin. So they have a service area where you have to have it within a certain area in order to use that. So if we had something in Portland, for example, and we needed a mitigation bank, we wouldn't be able to just choose whichever mitigation bank we want.
Okay.
Because you're trying to compensate for, you know, any impacts that you're causing in a certain location.
That's what I was trying to make sure of, yeah.
Other commissioner questions? No? All right. Someone else from your team?
Yeah, I just had a few things to address.
All right.
Once we get this slide up. So I did have a separate slide that we sent in, like amended site plan, but Jamie did such a good job with this slide, so I'm just going to use this one. A couple things to clarify about some folks' comments. One is regarding, let's see, this road right here. Just want to verify that. Just everybody knows that's a temporary emergency access road only. Another comment was about the terminus of Pinot Noir, that the road was too narrow. And we know that, we show that here. It has to be widened. It's like 21 or 20 feet. I don't know what happened. The contractor was asleep or something. But so we are proposing to widen that out to meet city standards at full 28 feet. Another thing to note is the public amenities around the wetlands. We're proposing a bench here next to the sidewalk, and another, this is like a lookout area. We'll have another public seating area as well. So just wanted to clarify that for you guys. The other thing I want to talk to you guys about is stormwater runoff. When we design these subdivisions, we have to meet the city standards for flow control. And because we're also filling wetlands, that kicks us into a higher standard where we also have to meet National Marine Fisheries Slopes 5 standards, which require both treatment and additional flow control. So what that means is we have to use BMPs for treatment, so bioswales, and that's what we're proposing here to treat the water. And then we also have to match the runoff from the post-developed conditions, such as, you know, the rain from, or the runoff from the streets and the sidewalks and the roofs. We have to collect all that and release that rain at the pre-developed condition for half the 2-year event, the 24-hour event, and the 10-year 24-hour event. So the pre-developed conditions of those. And that's required by Slopes 5 standards as far as filling the wetlands. And another thing, one other thing is regarding the FEMA floodway and floodplain. We are not proposing any floodplain fill of any kind. The only, and actually it's not allowed in city code, so we're not doing that at all. So if you guys have any questions.
I was curious about the park and the, it's going to be maintained by an HOA until 2032.
That's the bark. Yeah. So this shows the floodplain. We're not proposing any fill in the floodplain, but the park. So they're proposing to maintain the bark chip path that's next to the floodplain and the creek. Mm-hmm. Proposing to maintain that till the city can take it over at 2032.
Okay. But I did notice in the proposal that the city was not very happy about that. I mean, they said that they already, you know, they didn't have enough funds to take care of the parks that they have now. And it would be really awesome if I lived in that neighborhood, but I mean, that's pretty much
So when we had discussions with city staff, that's the whole point of delaying it till 2032, because then at that point, there's supposed to be sufficient funds to maintain the park.
Okay. And so,
Commissioner Butler, that was actually a request of the city to have that condition on this particular greenway and trail system after an internal dialogue.
Okay. And so in 2032, though, it's handed over to them, period.
No, it comes to us.
Yeah, handed over to the city, that's what I mean. And the city is taking care of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Answered? Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thank you.
I want a clarification actually on this. So the park's not going to be built until 2032 or?
No.
No, the park will be built and maintained by the applicant until 2032.
Okay.
The homeowner association, excuse me, until 2032, at such time the city will take over maintenance. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else on your team?
7 minutes.
So I just want to go in a little bit more details about the flood plain and that sort of thing with this slide. So right here, Pinot Noir enters the grass seed field here, and we have the lots are around here, preserving the trees in the floodplain, and the path will be along the floodplain and the creek as well, down to here. The cul-de-sac is right here. The street is along the toe of the bank. It comes out to here, and there's lots are right here. So we preserve all this area, all this floodplain area, and all this floodplain area in here as well. Just a little interesting thing about this map, you have this light blue area, which is the floodplain area, and then you have the floodway areas, which is the zebra striped through here. And how FEMA regulates these is the FEMA regulations state that you can fill the floodplain, this light blue area, all the way in. And what will happen in the model is this water will go up 1 foot. And so by not filling anything, we're not impacting that flood storage in any way. So do you guys have any other questions about that?
Apparently not. Okay, thank you. Final chance for the applicant. Nope. All right. Thank you. Does any person in the audience wish to speak in support of this proposal? All right. You come forward and sign in, please. Okay. All right. No one wishes to speak in support. All right. Does anyone wish to speak in opposition? Okay. Now, my understanding is there are several of you who are part of a group and you want to speak in a particular order. Are you part of that group, ma'am? All right. Are you? Okay. Go for it. Did I miss something?
Good evening. My name is Sandy Colvin, and I'm part of Friends of Baker Creek Wetlands. We have a group of three neighborhoods who've joined together to protect these wetlands that maybe don't flood. Actually, there's been three floods. Okay.
It moves. Yeah, just pull the mic. There. Much better.
Sandy Colvin, 2718 Northwest Pinot Noir Drive. I'd like to state above all else, and from the very beginning, Friends of Baker Creek's intent was never to impose the entire development. We never had an issue with anything going on up above. Our only concern is to protect the basin and the wetlands within it and the neighborhoods downstream, which the recent floodings have indicated that water's getting higher, and we'll have someone actually point that out. We don't want to make enemies by frivolous or selfish little objections. These are valid points, and we also offer constructive alternatives where we can. So with that, I'd like to introduce our first speaker. It was supposed to be Kathy Geckler, but Kathy is unable to be here, so it will be Catherine Olson.
Is this good?
Closer.
Better?
Yes.
I'm Catherine Olson. I'm at 2650 Northwest Pinot Noir Drive, and I'm with the Friends of Baker Creek. About the wetlands, we have a report recommending approval of a proposed development based on outdated and incomplete information. We're asking you to preserve 11.47 acres, call for accurate FEMA maps, and preserve a lone oak. Our greatest concern is the 11.47 acres. If it becomes part of the development, homes built will irreparably change the wetlands from a vital ecosystem to wet land. Because this proposal affects homes outside the mapped area, we can't look only at what is in front of us and ignore everything else. The McMinnville Residential Design Policies of 80.00, distinctive and unique natural features shall be preserved, are specifically covered by 166, 167, and 168.00. The wetlands is vibrant. Its health depends on current boundaries. Shrink the boundaries with homes and it will stagnate. Wetlands cover the slopes to existing homes. Exhibit 6 submitted by Premier depicts the area with a few small colored spots. Last summer in our 100 degree heat, all these grasses remained green, not just the tagged ones. That's because all of the ground is wet. We're missing reports from DSL, DEQ, Army Corps of Engineers. We don't know if they will even permit building on these lands. No comment beside their name on the report implies these agencies have no objection. We need reports in hand from these agencies. Planning said FEMA maps were updated 9 years ago. Land use changes since then could render them inaccurate. We call for accurate, updated FEMA maps. City Code Comp Plan 9.0, the city shall designate appropriate lands within its corporate limits as floodplain to prevent flood-induced property damages and to retain and protect natural drainage ways from encroachment by inappropriate uses. How inaccurate are the 2010 maps now? The wetlands now flood with less than 2 inches of rain. This isn't a simple inundation. Current flows capable of carrying debris from Baker Creek to the heart of the wetlands. The application says mitigation has been completed. Mike DeBlasi from DSL has walked the plan development. He said that while mitigation has been completed, it has failed, and wetlands have reestablished itself on top of the fill. Staff from Pacific Habitat agree until we have the reports in hand, we don't have enough facts. At the neighborhood meeting, we were told that 5 to 7 feet of fill would be used to build Pinehurst. Fill and asphalt covering a significant part of land that already floods to the top of the fence with flood homes in Crestbrook. Lastly, we would like a lone oak tree on lot one specifically preserved. 80.00 in proposed residential developments, isolated preservable trees shall be preserved wherever feasible. You're being asked to approve an incomplete plan. Because of the unique features of this land, you leave a legacy that goes beyond a housing development's rush to build. As a piece of the Greenway, it would be a jewel, but only if it left as a nature preserve, not as a housing development with a few benches scattered over leftover ground too wet to build on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tim Roberts.
Good evening. My name is Tim Roberts. I've been asked to give you some information about where we live. I think I present a very unique situation as I'm the only party, I believe, who has lived here for 25 years in the Baker Creek. So we were one of the very first ones built, and we have been there for 25 years continuously, never leaving. This is a picture that was taken in December 18 of 2018. That was our last high water event. And I call them high water events. They're not floods in the classical sense to my knowledge. But the water, I'll tell you, when it's raising up in front of your house and you've got creekfront property and you turn to the lakefront property, it's a little spooky. We have never been damaged by floodwaters. We've never had water encroach in our house. We have the house that is the closest to Baker Creek of all the houses that are existing right now. We are trying to help you with directions. We're east of the proposed property. We are downstream, and there have been times over the last 25 years where full-size logs have gone by in front of our house. This picture that's showing you right now is taken from our backyard. The oak trees in the top picture are Oak Ridge. Is there anything else I can help you with? The main stream of Baker Creek would be going down the right-hand side of this photograph.
What road are you on? What was your address?
We're on Baker Crest Court. I think I did, but 1069 Northwest Baker Crest Court. I probably signed in. That's what I thought. Anyway, so this picture shows, this was taken on December 18th of 2018. And which one's showing? I'm sorry? Oh. Okay, this is a picture that shows the water on the left-hand side and the no water on the right-hand side, obviously taken different times of the year. It can show you how fast that comes up. This is a picture from our backyard. And that water out here in the middle of the picture is about 2.5 feet deep. The fence is our neighbor's fence, and our neighbor is in the picture, next picture, okay. He will be standing in that next to the white fence. There he is. So the water is up to his mid-thigh, and that was all dry before. That came up in 6 hours. This is a picture looking almost due west toward Oak Ridge again. You can see the Toth sport court on the right-hand side, and the water is
up. You wrap it up, Mr. Roberts? You're out of time.
I have a question.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Do you happen to know the elevation of your house?
The elevation?
Yeah.
I mean, structurally or in reference to earth?
Reference to earth. What's the elevation of the property?
I don't know.
You don't know. Do you know if your property is in a floodplain?
Yes. We're in the 100-year floodplain.
Okay.
And so, it has come up to the 100-year floodplain or over it almost every year for okay. 20.
So you're aware of. Yeah. So you're aware.
I trust Sandy. She's gone.
He's not in the floodplain.
Anyway.
All those houses, he's behind the 500-year floodplain. 100, 500, and then the houses.
I said the property is in the floodplain.
Oh,
yes. Yes.
That's what I meant. The property is in floodplain, but it's a lot lower than where the proposed subdivision is supposed to be, huh? Correct?
I don't know elevations. I'm sorry.
No, but you can view from when you look at, you know, when you were looking at the lake, the area that's proposed for the
this picture
subdivision.
Here, this picture here is facing due east. No, I'm sorry, north. Due north, and that's the water gun truck.
Yeah, the picture that you have showing going looking west.
Yes, this is west.
Okay, so those trees back there are located on the property where the subdivision is supposed
yes.
to
be. Yes,
which looks to me is higher than your property.
Oh, we're at the bottom. We're the low feed end chain. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
But like I said, we have not had any damage. Thank God. Thank you.
All right. Good.
Have any questions?
Nope. I have Mike Colvin next.
You signed in?
Hello, my name is Mike Colvin. Chapter 10 of the Comprehensive Plan encourages citizen input, but the reality is that at this stage, probably 75% of the engineering seems to have been done. So our group has already been done, so our group has found that attempting even positive changes is a challenge. Our group's attempt to suggest a Saddam Street access to the Oak Ridge Meadows development is a perfect example. The original application claimed that Pioneer Street was the best access street and will be available in the near future. So our group showed Baker Creek Road is a half mile closer to the Oak Ridge Meadows development via Shadden Street than via Pinehurst. plus a letter from Les Toth makes it clear that the access to Pinehurst is at least 3 to 5 years down the road. And our flooding pictures also show that a FEMA 500-year flood plan has flooded 3 times in 5 years. And that was an earlier map they had up. I could point it out later. We feel that shows how inaccurate the FEMA maps are, so we strongly encourage the city to order a new FEMA map study, or new FEMA study, which such a study should provide the city accurate information on whether the 11.5 acres in the wetlands area is buildable or not. And that's all we're asking for. We know that the application shows that Shadden Street is only available as a temporary emergency street, which I'm sure is technically true. But Stafford Development is planning to move on their adjacent property this year too, is our understanding. My wife and I attended Stafford's neighborhood meeting 3 to 4 months ago. My wife took a picture of the layout they showed and photoshopped it onto Exhibit 26. Again, it isn't official, but it sure does show that Stafford plans to use Shadden as an access street in the future. Stafford's tentative plan also shows that future Oak Ridge Meadows residents will have not one, but 3 through access streets to choose from. That is 2 more than Pinehurst, and unfortunately, there are no through access streets in either Compton Crest or Oak Ridge developments, which is where the current application proposes to direct Oak Ridge Meadows residents for up to 5 years. And we in the rush hours can't get out in the morning, I'm here to tell you now, or in the afternoon. We acknowledge that Pinehurst Street was the only access street available 14 years ago, but that has changed. Shadden Street was connected to Cottonwood last year, and I would think that would make Shadden eligible. Since 80 to 90% of the homes in the Oak Ridge Meadows development will be located only a few hundred yards north of Baker Creek Road, Shadden Street will obviously provide the closest, quickest, and safest access to that group of residents. I know that your final ruling is based on comprehensive plan goals and policies. I'm going to hand in tonight a separate report that shows the goals and policies that Shadden Street would meet and that the lower Pinehurst Street does not meet. In conclusion, please do not trash the environment and the quality of life in 3 currently great neighborhoods to gain 10 or 15 houses and a dead-end road to nowhere. Please have the foresight to name Shadden as a primary access street to Oak Ridge Meadows. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Colvin.
Yes.
Any questions of Mr. Colvin from the commissioners? Nope, apparently not. Thank you. All right. Scott Wellman.
Good evening. My name is Scott Wellman, and I would like to address myself to what is distinctive about the Baker Creek wetlands in keeping with the city's resource policy, goal numbered 168. It's coming. To wit, distinctive natural features shall be retained wherever possible in future urban developments. My wife and I live at 2756 Pinot Noir Drive in the accurately named subdivision of Oak Ridge. Below our ridge is a basin that has been carved out of the earth by the action of Baker Creek, which flows down from the western hills. The basin is integral to the dynamics of the creek because it is this basin that absorbs the flood water when rains overwhelm the creek's shallow bed. Over time, flooding has created a wetland out of this basin, encompassing some 60% of the 25 acres of land. Waters also accumulate here as a result of drainage from the ridge above and from springs below. These forces have created a refuge for animals of all kinds, beginning with frogs and field mice and the various critters who prey upon them, including raccoons, coyotes and bobcats, and from the air, predatory birds such as eagles, hawks, owls, and vultures. The Audubon Society has noted that there are some 40 species of birds altogether who take advantage of the wetland basin. Most prominent are the acorn woodpeckers who make their homes in the dense oak groves. Ornithologists note that this is a rare colony of birds whose welfare would be seriously threatened by the loss of many more oaks. Other rare birds include the California quail, unique in McMinnville, coveys of which are often spotted on the slopes of the basin, taking cover in the blackberry thickets. Flocks of geese, pairs of ducks, and other waterfowl are also frequent visitors. When you flip through a guide, such as Birds of the Willamette Valley Region, you notice that many birds share a fondness for a common habitat, open lowlands, brushy river edges, wetland verges, shrubby hillsides, and the fringes of human habitation. These birds, including various species of sparrows, wrens, warblers, finches, and swallows.
What?
Well, I'm going to keep going just a bit. As such, larger birds...
We're going to keep going a bit.
Well, I'm representing a serious aspect of this, and I think I need to continue just...
We understand, but we're giving everybody the same amount of time, so please try to wrap it up.
We'll always accept that testimony in writing for the record. And the commissioner will read it.
Huh? Yeah, I'll turn it all in. What else do we got?
Thank you. I'm sorry we have to do this, but it's fair to everyone.
Well, you know, this is a complicated issue. It's difficult to explain it in 3 minutes.
I think we got the point you were making.
200 plus pages for Lakey.
Okay. All right.
We have one more.
Bill Kabaisman?
Yep.
Okay.
Chair Hall, commissioners, good evening. My name is Bill Kabaisman. I'm an attorney with Bateman Seidel, address at 888 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland, Oregon, 97204. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you tonight. I'm going to talk fast because I've got limited time and with a two-hour staff. So anyway, stop me if you have questions. I'm here tonight representing Friends of Baker Creek. You've heard some of the members, but it's a much larger group of residents and neighbors who are concerned by this proposal and its impacts on the wetlands and their neighborhood transportation system. Usually when I represent opponents, they want to address every issue they possibly can to stop it. That's not what this group wants. They have two very specific concerns. It's about preserving the wetlands and making sure the transportation system still works. I've submitted some written materials. I don't expect you to read it tonight. I would ask that you continue this hearing because there are a number of people who wanted to speak to you had to leave because of timing. So I'd ask that you make that opportunity available for them. I want to provide you with some context and things to hold on to as you make your decision. And we're asking you to deny this proposal. You know, frankly, there are three proposals. The first one, if you were to approve, isn't going to matter too much to take that piece out of the subdivision, but it's the other two that are problematic. Let's talk about the context. What is the applicant asking for? They want to amend a previously approved plan development and then have a subdivision of the combined lands for that amended plan development. As your code says, plan divisions are designed to provide more flexibility and freedom than is possible with strict interpretation of the code. And in return, the city gets something else. Typically, it's preservation of natural areas. It's an allowance of different things. And I'd ask you to take a look at what they're saying. A large part of it is predicated around these wetlands. They're destroying a third of these wetlands with their road. They're going to preserve other wetlands somewhere outside of Recreal, but the city is going to lose a significant portion of a major natural area. And the city simply does not get that benefit here. Let's talk about the wetlands a little bit more. The biggest concern is really the Pinehurst Road and the development homes along it. Eliminating those would go a long way to eliminating the problem. The one other piece I want to turn to access, and what I didn't hear was surprising today. If you look at the exhibits to my letter to you, in particular Exhibit 2, Ordinance 4822, and Exhibit 3, a LUBA opinion filed on an appeal by this very developer about this very development back in 2005. This concern was about a condition that this city placed on that development, limiting development to 76 lots until new access was provided. Directly responding to Commissioner Butler's, even though those lots were approved, there was a limit on the development of 76. And there is no attempt to change or amend Ordinance 4822. And so based on what the city has already decided, this isn't an approvable plan development without amending 4822. So I would urge you to read the rest of the material. Again, keep the record open to allow people who didn't get an opportunity to address you tonight. And otherwise, unless you have questions, I know my time is up.
Any commissioner have questions? Yes, Susan?
There was one too few of your materials, and I was the person who didn't get it.
Sure.
We'll read it if you give it to me.
Can I approach?
You may approach. You may approach the bench. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I had another question as well. Actually, it was of the gentleman who I think left immediately preceding. Are you still here? Oh, okay. You just moved seats, I guess. May I ask him a question?
Yes.
Okay. This is a very specific question. you were discussing the trees and the birds, and you were describing them as being, I believe you described them as being on the bluff, or where were you talking about? Were you talking about by the creek?
Common habitat, which is low land, the verges of wetlands, the riversides, and then the slopes.
Okay, so are you talking about the slope that goes down from the currently existing Pinot Noir?
Correct.
Okay, that's my question. Thank you.
Oh, okay, that was too easy. Martin, go ahead.
I have a question. Maybe this is for staff, but you probably know too since you brought it up. Has the LUBA remand been reheard, or what happened to the remand?
I'm sorry, what's your question?
The remand from LUBA.
Oh,
yes, yeah, so that did go back to City Council.
Okay.
And City Council amended their finding relative to the LUBA remand.
Okay.
They adopted ordinance number 4845 in response to the LUBA remand.
Okay.
And that's in the exhibits I gave to you as well.
And that ordinance said, I haven't had a chance to read it yet.
That ordinance reiterated the limitation on the number of lots
dwellings
that can be developed.
Yeah, so you, okay. The ordinance actually, what it did was it amended the finding for that particular condition. The ordinance itself doesn't talk about the condition.
Okay.
It amended the finding based on the LUBA remand. So 4822 has the condition of approval in it. 4822 is recommended to be repealed by the decision document.
Okay, so what is the final answer for number of dwellings?
Based on the traffic impacts analysis that was submitted, it's 108 units.
Okay.
That would be a good question of the applicant.
Okay.
And let me just say that I disagree with what you just heard from your planning director, that 4845 did in fact impose that condition, and that is something that this current application does not address and cannot be approved without dealing with 4845.
Can I refer to our esteemed legal counsel?
I'll take it under advisement. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Mr. Kvisman?
Thank you.
Nope.
Chair Hall.
All right. I assume there are others present who would like to speak in opposition tonight. Okay, you got your hand up first. We'll let you go first.
I'll see you.
Hi, thank you for hearing me and allowing me to participate in this process. My name is Steve Fox. I own a home at...
Sign in, Steve.
Oh, I need a pen.
And then tell us where you live.
Okay, okay. I'll need a pen to sign in.
Oh.
But I'll tell you where I live anyway to keep this going. I live right at the corner of Oak Ridge and Pinot Noir, 2687 Northwest Oak Ridge Drive. There are many families on that corner with many little children that I'm sure will be surprised to see another 1,000 cars going by on a daily basis. I know you got a process, you have boxes you need to check, and you're following everything by the book, and I appreciate that. I know part of that is hearing from the public that's impacted by these. You spend a lot of time, the staff here, the developer and his team, and no doubt a lot of money and budget trying to get to this point. And as a person that is impacted by this project, I just want to ask for more information. I moved to McMinnville in 2017. Love McMinnville. Every person I met has been friendly to me. I was even greeted by Miss Richards. She was very friendly to me as well. In part, I'm here because of something I read in the paper last night where she wasn't quoted, but the reporter said that she stated that the friends of Baker Creek had been misrepresenting things. I would say that no one's been misrepresenting anything intentionally, but we've been getting information and we've been trying to share that with people so that they know what is going on. And this process hopefully will uncover some things. Now, I mentioned when I moved here in 2017, I found the town to be very greeting. One thing that surprised me was that dump trucks were going by my house, that corner, all day long that summer. And I was wondering what was going on, if there was a development going in or what. And so I walked down to the end of Pinot Noir, and I found that those dump trucks were leaving dirt on a slope to a creek. I don't know if water was flowing, if it's seasonal, what's going on, but there was clearly a slope that was there that was being filled in for some reason. I bring that up because tonight I've heard that a part of this process states that they will not use any landfill. And I would ask you, has anybody checked to see if they've already done that? Was there a permit for that dumping that was going on in 2017?
I have a quick question. Can you point out on the map where they were been dumping it?
Well, I don't have a map, but if you were to go, if you were to look at the map going up Pinot Noir.
He's going to put the map up.
Okay. So as we're looking at this, it would be the west side of the development. So again, I'm not a surveyor, I'm not an environmental expert or biologist or anything, but that kind of surprised me. I thought you couldn't really put stuff on a slope of a watershed. I mean, there's filtration that naturally happens, that water when it hits the bottom, it's flowing clean. And I just assumed there was a permit for something, and so it'd be great if someone would pull that and see if there was a permit for that dumping. Another thing I heard tonight was that there was an approval of a plan back in 2000. In fact, Ms. Butler brought that up a couple times. This was originally approved 19 years ago. Okay, but what's happened since then? I'm sure regulations have changed. I'm sure other issues have come about. And are those same permits still valid today? I heard about a 2010 environmental study maybe by FEMA. What's happened in the last 9 years? It'd be good to know, even though perhaps the box has been checked, that you're following the regs based on what's on the books, what's happened in the meantime? It'd be good to know those answers. Another question that I have is, my understanding of projects like this is they go through different design alternative analysis. There was an original plan. Now they're trying the plan is to remove it and to have a new plan. Were there only two choices? Weren't there other alternatives looked at? If so, can we see those? Finally, traffic.
Quickly.
Shadden Road, why was that not selected to be developed first? Finally, are you willing to use the power of eminent domain If the road isn't wide enough at the end of Pinot Noir, you're going to have to take property from property owners. Are you willing to approve a plan today that might necessitate your use of eminent domain to take that land in order for this road to be wide enough for people to use it? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions of the speaker from the commissioners? No. All right. Thank you, sir.
Let me just get this down since I did it first.
Okay, I promise this lady next.
And then while you're signing, I just wanted to let everyone know those documents that are being given to us tonight, we're entering them into the record. They will be posted on the website tomorrow, so everyone will have access to them.
My name is Gail Norby. I live at 2840 Northwest Pinot Noir Drive. And to piggyback on what this gentleman just said, I want to say that I am appalled that there is no written documentation about the idea that Pinot Noir was going to be expanded from 21 feet wide to 26 feet wide. Everything I've prepared tonight has to do with that bottleneck of road. And it was not discussed at the new neighborhood meeting. It is not in any of the application process. It is not in the staff report. And I just think that that is a way to slip something in and not have adequate public notification. So based on that, I believe that this whole application needs to be denied. McMinnville prides itself on safety and livability. This is a wonderful town. All of the policies that I have read regarding subdivision development address the livability of this town. This development does not address those kinds of issues. I want to talk about that 21-foot access place. That will be the primary access place for up to 5 years of this build out. The traffic study talks about that the anticipated traffic flow will be 1,080 vehicles per day. That is not counting the current traffic flow, which is an additional, I don't know, I can't do the math off the top of my head, but it will end up being exactly, coincidentally, at what has been determined to be the desired neighborhood standard flow on a typical street. Pinot Noir is not typical. It is 21 feet wide. So a typical vehicle, an SUV, a truck, a passenger car is 7 feet wide. I imagine an emergency vehicle is 12 feet wide. There is no way in the world, if a car is legally parked on Pinot Noir, that an emergency vehicle can access 108 homes. All right, secondly, moving along, because Pinot Noir is so narrow and there's going to be a bottleneck there, it will definitely impact the livability and the safety of our neighborhood. And I would really appreciate if the commission would take those ideas into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, any questions? Yes.
I have a question for the engineer. So we know that Pinot Noir was built 21 feet, but isn't there a right-of-way set for that?
Can you repeat the question?
Isn't there a right-of-way recorded for the Pinot
Noir? An easement?
No, it was built to 21 feet, but isn't there a right-of-way that is the right size right-of-way?
That's correct. The right-of-way for that section of Pinot Noir is 50 feet, and submitted materials and exhibits indicate that that section of roadway will be widened to the 28-foot standard for city streets.
That was not made public. I went through every piece of paper.
It's in the submitted exhibits plans that were submitted with the subdivision application.
On the website?
So you mean the new subdivision is going to be 28 feet? They're not going to widen what's currently there?
Yeah. They are.
Yes, they are. It's shown on Exhibit 43, I believe, very specifically.
Thank you.
And
so that means there will be at least 10 trees removed in that section, and there will be at least 10 feet of property removed on each side.
That the your property, if I'm correct, goes to the right-of-way only.
I understand that. Okay.
And if the right-of-way was set, there is no need for eminent domain to take property from anybody, because the right-of-way is, like the engineer pointed out, 50 feet. And your property goes only to the 50-foot right-of-way. So there is 50-foot space there to put a regular road in there.
All right, then I have a follow-up question. At whose expense? At whose expense?
So I would advise the commissioners that this is your opportunity to receive testimony, evidence from the audience. It's not the time to engage in colloquy.
All right, thank you.
You bet. Thank you. All right. Yes, sir.
I am Mark Beerley. We live at 2729 Northwest Riesling Way, which is the developed portion of the Oak Ridge subdivision. Like most of the other speakers before me, we're not opposed to the development. That's not the issue. There are two specific concerns that we have that we feel need to be addressed by the commission. One is the impact on the wetlands, which I think has already been adequately covered. The other one that I wanted to discuss is the traffic access, which the previous speaker also mentioned. As you're aware, at least for the first apparently 5 years or so, there will only be one access to the 108 homes. You may remember on the front page of the News Register in December, there was a picture of an oak tree that fell over a house. That house was on Pinot Noir Drive, right at the access to this proposed development. If the tree had fallen 90 degrees turned, it would have blocked the road. Pinot Noir at that end goes through an oak grove. There are lots of oak trees. We haven't lived there very long, but the neighbors tell us that that's not the first oak tree to fall over. My concern is that if there's another windstorm and an oak tree falls across the road, there'll be no way for folks in that subdivision to get in or out until they can wait for public works to come and clear the road. And this will probably be occurring in the middle of a storm when either there's an emergency or the city's tied up with issues some other place, different part of town. The other thing is, during the construction period, all of the construction equipment, vehicles, and workers are going to be using that same Pinot Noir Drive. So you also have all of that construction traffic in addition to the traffic of the residents. So what I would recommend to the commission is that you require an immediate second public access to the subdivision. Don't wait for Stafford to get around to doing it. We don't know when that's going to happen, and that's not going to solve the problem between now and then. If a second access is needed and planned, and from what I hear tonight, it is needed and it is planned, I would urge the commission not to wait. If it's needed, it's needed now, not 5 years from now. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else? Come forward, please. Please sign in and Also, tell us who you are and where you live.
Sure. My name is Lon Skeen. I live at 2578 Northwest Merlot. And I just...
Northwest where?
Merlot.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, right at the intersection of Pinot Noir and Merlot. I guess I just have a couple of questions for consideration. One is, when a building permit like this is granted to the builder, that was granted when, 2000, I think it was originally, what type of financial analysis has been done on Premier Homes and their viability if we do hit another recession to complete the project in our timely timeline of 5 years? The 10-year Treasury bond yield just inverted. That's a very bad sign for a future recession. The last time it happened was in 2007. Here we are again. Bond yields inverted. How sustainable are they through another recession? In addition to that, a little facetiousness here. I'd like to commend you on the bureaucracy of having a two-hour presentation followed by 45 minutes to get half the room to evacuate. Thanks.
We ask you not to do that, please. Okay. Anyone else who wants to speak in opposition to this proposal? Yes, sir. Okay, we'll get you. Go ahead, sir. Your point.
My name is Ray Clevidence, and I live at 1493 Northwest Riesling Way in McMinnville, and I'm going to make this brief. I concur with the Covens. Thank you.
Bless you. Okay.
My name is Andrew Graisley. I live at 2575 Northwest Pinot Noir Drive. I would also like to express my appreciation for people who have especially brought up the issue of traffic through Pinot Noir Drive. I personally can't imagine 1,000 more cars per day driving down that road when it could be very easily alleviated through building the access road on Shadden. It's already a relatively busy road. It's a very narrow road, and I just think that livability will be greatly decreased through the extra traffic in there. Just imagine yourselves in your homes, and imagine the road that you live on has 1,000 more cars going down it per day when it could be easily prevented by building that road on Shadden. That's all I have to really say about that. Thank you.
Any questions? No commissioner questions?
I have a question for staff on this. I had thought that it's 1,200 total. It's not another 1,000. Could you clarify that, Jamie, or could we find that somewhere? So I think
Exhibit 28.
Exhibit 28. Thank you.
So actually, Commissioner, I believe the transportation engineer is here, and that could be something for the opponent to answer for you. Okay. But I do think clarification would be good in terms of that. But it's up to the chair how he wants to, if they're asking if should they answer that question now or when they're in the rebuttal.
The latter. All right. Anyone else who wants to speak in opposition to this proposal? Okay. Thank you. Normally what I would ask at this point, well, let's see. Let me think a moment. Does anyone
wish to pose questions to me to be addressed to the applicant.
I think that's already been done.
What? Well, the commissioner's been doing it.
Right. No, that's.
Okay, I sit corrected. Does the applicant want to, at this point, respond to any of the testimony given in opposition to it? Yes, all right. 10 minutes. Max, and if you want to, bless you, less.
Use 10 minutes time limit on that.
I am Lacey Brown with DKS Associates. I was a traffic engineer on this project. I'm out of our Salem office, 117 Commercial Street Southeast in Salem. To answer the most recent question regarding the volume of traffic, it is 1,200 vehicles per day total. Of which on that very northern section of Pinot Noir Drive before it would enter the Oak Ridge Meadows development, there is an existing roughly 200 trips per day. So we would be adding just over 1,000 trips per day to that section. So I do want to reiterate that the portion of Pinot Noir Drive that would be at that max capacity of 1,200 vehicles per day is roughly about 500 feet before it connects to other roadways or the traffic would split. So it is not the entire section of Pinot Noir Drive that would be at capacity. Regarding an earlier question about livability and that how that plays into it, the main body of the traffic impact study where we looked at intersection operations, including volume to capacity and delay and level of service, that is standard methodology. What we typically use to evaluate a traffic impact study. The only reason we included the livability study is because DKS Associates previously conducted a study for this, the first version of this development in 2004. And at that time, the Oak Ridge development was not complete and there was not sufficient traffic data to conduct those types of analyses at that time. So we used the closest we could get without the data that we needed, which was that kind of livability evaluation. And that was just included in this study as an update now that we have actual numbers to apply to that. But that is not a typical piece of information that we would use to evaluate the impacts of a development like this.
Question. Does your 1,200 trips per day include construction vehicles, or is it the vehicles after the construction is all finished?
That would be after, that's at complete build out. So there would be no more construction vehicles. That is with every residence being occupied. That is the trip generation.
For the first X years, as there's construction going on, there would be more vehicles than the 1,200.
No, because all of the units would not be occupied.
No, I'm talking about construction, the dump trucks, yeah, the construction vehicles themselves. Okay, you're right.
Correct.
Yeah.
I had to do the math. Sorry, you're right.
Okay. All right. Anything else you wanted to respond to? Or?
Can I ask her a question? No?
You may. They're not responding until you.
So the 1,200 trips per day is only for the period of time after the all 108 units are built out.
Correct.
And assuming that the extension of Shadon Drive is not yet built.
Correct.
Which we do not yet know about.
Correct, yes. Okay. So we'd be at full build out of the development
at full
prior to Shadon Drive
Shadon
connection.
Being finished.
Yes.
Presumably it would be considerably less in the earlier years than then.
Right. Okay, just wanted to make that clear.
Good evening, Wendy Kellington, the applicant. P.O. Box 159, Lake Oswego. I don't want to respond to, I think, 6 points that were brought up. And just to clarify a few things, and again, thank you for
enduring the marathon here. So the first point I really want to reinforce, and I think it's terribly important, is that there will be no widening of roads on private land. All of the small amount of widening within the existing subdivision between Blake and on Pino up to the subdivision, the proposed subdivision from 21 to 28 feet will be within the existing right-of-way. The second thing, it is. Thank you. The second thing I want to respond to is the comment that the fill and the asphalt and all of the grading will cause sheet stormwater impacts that flood downstream properties. And that's incorrect. That, as the reports in the record indicate, the applicant has designed a stormwater management system completely consistent with the city's stormwater management plan that involves detention and pretreatment and water being released to pre-development conditions on the site. Three, Mr. Roberts was providing some photographs of the floodplain doing what the floodplain is paid to do. We're not talking about any development that would be within a floodplain. So those photographs are not relevant to what we're talking about here. I want to remind you, using the slide that staff provided, what's allowed now under the existing regulatory regime that covers this property. The proposal is less intense than that which is allowed on the subject property and adds greenway and park and natural features that are not otherwise required or available under use permitted outright. And I think that's important to understand. Three, Mr. Kabeisman provided to us this package of papers that we hadn't seen before, but I will note to your attention that he is mistaken. The ordinance that he cites was not an ordinance that changed the terms of Ordinance 4822. All that it did was to amend the findings. On page 4 of Exhibit A of the ordinance, that the additional ordinance, and it's 4855 that he cites, it says, based on the findings and conclusions above, the council concludes that its Ordinance 4822, implementing the zone change and PD overlay, does not require any additional substantive amendment to decision, but should be modified to incorporate these supplemental findings in support of the decision. So all that Ordinance 4855 did was simply to add findings. And what do those findings say? Among other things, they say that the applicant may file an application to amend the condition pursuant to the code and make its case at that time. And that is an application to amend and remove the 78 lot limitation that was included within Ordinance 4822. This application, as staff ably has pointed out, supersedes, removes the entirety of 4822 and imposes these new regulations on Oak Ridge Meadows. And so it's doing exactly what the ordinance that Mr. Kabeisman provided to you suggested be done. And why is the requirement being eliminated? Because the fire department says it's not necessary so long as you sprinkle the houses. We don't need that secondary access. We're providing a temporary access that the fire department can use should it choose or believe it to be necessary if trees fall down or other things like that. But there's nothing inconsistent about what staff has recommended and what's being requested here today. And finally, I want to point out that it's true, sometimes trees fall down. And sometimes our neighborhood in Lake Oswego, I can't get out until my husband gets out there with a chainsaw and chops them up. And I've even had trouble getting out because a power line went down. I had to call the fire department so I could get out. So these things happen, and I think, again, what's allowed outright on the subject property
is far more intensive and far more beneficial, far less beneficial to the neighborhood than what is being proposed. If you look at the standards that apply right now, FEMA has perfectly good flood standards that apply that the applicant will comply with. It'll comply with the stormwater management ordinance and will not have the deleterious impacts that have been ascribed to the development, but rather will meet all of your standards. And it'll be a development you're very proud of, the very first one ever to dedicate this kind of public open space and parks. So recommend, ask, please, that you approve the proposal now. There's been a request for a continuance, so some folks who left early can participate. If there is a continuance, we would like to also have the opportunity to participate in those continuation proceedings, and I imagine you would allow us to do that.
Mr. Chair.
Oh. We have a little time left.
You did touch on it briefly, but I just wanted to further explain about the road that we're widening. It's just the end of Pinot Noir. Next down, it's about one.
Now, they've got a minute and a half left, ma'am. I pause the timer when questions are being asked. Thank you.
That road, it tapers from the full section down to 21 feet, and all we're doing in a 50-foot right-of-way. And so with this proposal, we're just going to widen that out to meet city standards in the existing right-of-way. So.
Thank you.
I do have a question, perhaps not for either one of them, but I didn't want to ask it before the public had a chance to speak. And, you know, I didn't want to make them wait longer. It's a question about the little pocket park. Is that something that I can ask now? You know, the small park that is planned to be, not the greenway, but the small park that is down that very steep slope, and then it's the 0.85 acres.
Yes?
Yeah, so I had a couple of questions about that. One is that I'm confused about, there was supposed to be some benches and some playground equipment, which I know is very expensive, and it wasn't clear from the application and the staff report who's paying for those things to be installed there. So that's my first question. And my second question is that seems, just from my viewing of the area, to be a very steep area to actually have a playground. And I understand there's the trail down to it, and then the playground is supposed to be at the bottom. But that's going to be pretty small if you're only using less than an acre. So I wonder if you considered any other locations actually that were more central to the folks who are living up on the flatter, higher land that actually have the much smaller lots anyway. So those are my two questions.
First of all, the park will be built by the developer, us, and paid for. I think maybe you have the slope upside down.
Okay.
There's a trail along at the terminus of Pinot Noir.
Right.
Just where the property starts.
Right.
There'll be a trail that goes beside the last house.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a little flatter on the top, and we'll have to excavate it, and there are certain standards that the play equipment mm-hmm. people have, and so much fall space and whatnot, that we will clear and be able to put a play structure there, and then the winding.
Oh, so the playground is going to
below.
Be on the top.
Yes.
And then the trail goes down.
Yes.
Okay. I did not understand that. Sorry. But did you consider it being located at a more central location?
We did not.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions of the developer at this point? No? All right. For those who testified this evening, do any of you wish to request the opportunity to present additional evidence, arguments, or testimony regarding the application?
You need that.
Yeah, I will. I'm not done. I will repeat that. What I asked was, for those of you who testified this evening, do any of you wish to request the opportunity to present additional evidence, arguments, or testimony regarding this application? All right? And we will do this in one of two ways. We will either do it by continuing the public hearing or by closing the public hearing and keeping the record open. You have the right to request the opportunity to provide additional evidence, arguments, or testimony. The commission will decide on how to proceed with that request. So some of you are asking for an opportunity to do that. Is that correct? You still want to do so? All right, well, it has to be someone who's already participated this evening. So, all right. So now it's up to the commission to decide whether you want to continue the hearing or close the hearing, but keep it the record open. No, this is us now. Thank you. Yes.
There was some concern that some people had left and were not able to testify. Can we allow those people the chance?
Because we can by continuing the hearing.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to continue the hearing.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
That consensus? All right.
You mean continue on another night?
Yes.
Okay.
No, we're going to 3 or 4 in the morning, and you can. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, that's the official terminology, means continue it to another date. And that's generally at the following meeting, which would be, get the calendar out here. Whatever the third Thursday of May is. All right. May 16th, 6:30 p.m. here.
And there will not be a presentation from the staff on that evening. We will all know, so it will just be an opportunity for the public, correct? And the applicant. Is that correct?
It's not a de novo here.
No. What is it?
It'll be a continuation of this hearing, so you may still have an opportunity to ask staff questions at the end of that hearing. But I don't anticipate another staff report, because it'll just be a continuation of this hearing. Yes.
All right. So the commission has decided to do that, to continue the hearing to that date.
Here's the mic.
We've never had to share a mic before. Wow. Okay. The applicant is allowed at least 7 days after the record is closed to all other parties to submit final written arguments in support of the application. Or you may waive that. That would be next week, next month. Okay. All right. Okay. I think then we're ready to close the hearing. Yes. All right. We're going to let you go home, is what I'm trying to say. And you're all welcome to come back a month from tonight, basically. All right? So we will continue the hearing to that date aforementioned, and we will move on with the rest of our agenda. Is that clear to everyone? Yes, sir. That's correct.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, you probably have the same 3-minute limitation.
I need to practice.
All right. And as you're filing out, I want to say a personal word of thanks. I know this is long and tedious, and it's hard to sit on those hard chairs for that length of time, but we appreciate the fact that you not only were here to participate, but were willing to sit through all of that. It's what our process is supposed to be like. And I think you should pat yourselves on the back as you leave and hopefully come back next month. All right?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Aren't we supposed to have a motion to continue the hearing?
Don't we have another?
Don't need a motion, do we?
Chair found by unanimous acclamation.
That's right.
We have another action item tonight.
Okay, we'll have a 2-minute recess. You're willing to, welcome to stay if you like. We have one tiny little bit of business yet to take care of.
Jamie only spoke for what?
It was good. He's saying.
Yeah, it wasn't because it was too long. And it's an hour and 15 minutes. No.
You're looking at me as if that's what you think I did. But the reason that I said it, Heather, was so that the people who were here would know that when they came back, they would not need to listen to the staff report again. Okay. Well, then you could have said that. I didn't mean to. I will personally apologize, Tim. I didn't mean that. I'm the last person to criticize the staff. I've only lauded the staff on multiple occasions.
You're not allowed to take it home.
Nor did I mean to do it in a way that the public felt that I did
a Pinot Noir that would get 1,000.
Clearly, that's the way it came off.
Our house is right there. So that's why we're here.
Well, now it is.
Please come back.
You will.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, then perhaps I can suggest in return, he did a great job. And I think that in return, perhaps I can suggest in return that when I asked if there would be a staff report, the answer was actually not no, which is what I was told. But instead, the answer was yes. We will summarize. And it's also true that it's a legal requirement. Is that not correct? Exactly. Until we could, that was the intention of my question, was to find so that the people who would be coming next week would understand what the meeting was doing.
I think she was just trying to.
These are our support people, and we love them.
Can we finish our commission meeting, please?
People need to use the restroom.
We're going to give her 2 minutes.
We still have another item that we need to get done, so.
the rest of this will be apparently very quick. As a matter of necessity, it'll be very quick.
There's still Carl.
I can't wait to go home and have a glass of Pinot Noir. I was like, hang
on. Okay, we're going to.
Irving.
If you're not staying for the last action,
please exit the chamber.
Nice job, you guys.
Night. All righty.
What's up?
All that.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Okay, we're jumping back in here. We do have one more action item on the agenda for this evening. And the Planning Commission's responsibility on this item is to review and take action on a request for the approval of an extension of a previously approved tentative partition plan. Will staff please give a presentation?
Yeah, so it's really quick. We
I'm trying to stay away from that word, Heather.
We approved a minor partition on April 5, 2017. They're good for a year. Then per our code, the applicant can come in and request an extension, and that's administrative. So that did occur as well. During the course of the time with that request for an extension, the applicant actually passed away. His family is trying to figure out how they want to move forward. They've asked for some more time, another extension. To do another extension, we can't do that administratively. By code, it comes to you as the Planning Commission. We are recommending to you, due to extenuating circumstances, that you recommend another year's extension on the minor partition.
Any questions of staff? No?
Move to approve.
Yep.
Okay.
Second.
All right.
Yes.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
Nay.
That is approved. Thank you.
He bombed what? Vacate the premises.
Does that mean we're
like in London in 1940?
Yeah.
Wait, can we move to?
Are there?
Yeah, it's for the volunteer.
Are we adjourned?
Heather,
oh, really?
No, we're not. We're not adjourned.
Heather.
Do any commissioners have any comments to provide to the Planning Commission this evening? Anything for the good of the cause?
I have a question for staff.
Okay.
Besides the continuation of this, do we have anything else on agenda next month?
Yes, you will have another plan development amendment.
Oh, good.
Public hearing.
Are you going to double our salary?
Yes.
Of course.
Is it going to be contentious?
The neighborhood meeting had one person attend it who was supportive of the project.
Oh, good.
This neighborhood meeting had many people who attended it that were similar to this evening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we should put that one first so we don't hold up the poor person.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, we'll have to figure that out.
Okay. Corey has a question.
I don't have a question. I just want to tell people that my jewelry is going to be at 10 Oaks Gallery. And May 18th, I'm supposed to have an opening, if I can get it all done. So you're welcome to come.
Okay, I don't think that's Planning Commission business, but what the heck?
I have,
all right.
I have a procedural question.
Okay.
Staff.
Oh, I thought you said you're going to have a procedure.
Yeah.
That
well, maybe.
Remove foot from mouth. Question for staff. If the Planning Commission votes no for these three concatenated proposals, does that allow the developer to go back to the original approved plans, 4722 and 4822, and just build out to those approved plans?
No, so they would have to. So right now, I think of it as what's booked legally. So right now, what is booked legally are those two ordinances that you saw, 4722 and 4822.
Right.
They do not expire. They have a plan embedded in them. They would have to cut, but that did expire. So our tentative subdivision plan expired for Oak Ridge Meadows. The fourth phase expired for Oak Ridge. They could have come in with just two applications for subdivision plans underneath those plan development ordinances, and just, you know, meet the criteria. It would come to you, and then they build away. But because of the fact that there was this last piece and then this bigger piece, we talked about master planning doing and those two together. So they made the choice to come in with the plan development amendment to bring that one piece into the other one. If it's a denial of no, they'll come in with a subdivision plan that meets the previous plan, the previous ordinances.
Which probably wouldn't include the park spaces.
It would not include the park spaces.
It would not what, please?
Include the park spaces.
Okay. I just wanted to know what our options
were. Yeah. Huh?
Okay, good.
What the consequences were if we decide something.
Yeah. The other thing to let you know in terms of process is if you deny the subdivision, so there's three in front of you, if you deny all three of them, the decision is considered rendered for all three of them, even though your decision for the plan development amendment is a recommendation of City Council. The way our code is written is if you deny it, it's considered rendered, and then the applicant has the opportunity to appeal that decision to the City Council. So they could appeal the two plan developments to the City Council. If you are the decision maker for the subdivision, if you deny that, they can appeal that to the City Council as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Other staff comments?
I have no other staff comments.
Do I hear a motion?
Just something really brief.
I made the motion to quit.
You couldn't resist.
Thank you for your patience tonight.
Motion for adjournment.
I saw a move.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're out of here.
And thank you for the chocolates. Now that
yeah,
we're
that would be nice
off the record.
That. They got me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Do this again.
I think I hear a glass of wine in my future.
It's almost too late for a glass of wine.
Okay.